Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Mom is with us. There she is. Waiting for her to just push one. There we go. Hello.
Good afternoon. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yay. We're having tacos for dinner. What are you having?
Oh, man, I need to get some tacos because, yeah. I think that's what I'll have for dinner. How's that?
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
I won't be making them, but I'll be purchasing them from a taco shop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Us too, for sure.
Yeah, because there's too many ingredients and too much stuff that to make them right. You got to do it right. Otherwise, it's not worth eating them.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
How you doing? How's things going?
Doing okay. Just dropped off two dogs. So there's only currently one dog in the house, just Chiva. So that's a little peaceful.
The Tiva girl. It's Grandma's chicken.
Yeah.
That's Grandma's chicken. Okay, so I already told Danielle this earlier, and for the listeners, I'm sorry to say that good news this week. We're having some difficulties here in our country. In fact, we decided that today would just be everything is wicked and stupid. So that I'm going to share a little bit about some revelations that came out this week that I know you guys will be surprised to hear that there's been cheating going on in all of those 4,000 indictments of Donald J. Trump. And they have the receipts now, though, which is cool. So I'll be talking about that. And Jeffrey Epstein is going to be on the scene again today. So that's what we'll be doing.
Okay, sounds good. There's a caller. Welcome. Press one if you want to be a part of the show. If not, we're just glad you're here.
Welcome, caller.
Oh, I should turn on the chat too. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. All right, take it away.
So apparently, I'm going to take you guys back a few months, well over a year ago, and we woke up to the news that the federal government was raiding the home of a former president. And inference was that Donald J. Trump had classified info and that he didn't have the security clearance to have those documents. He tried to conceal. He tried to keep those documents from the people who really had the ability to possess those documents. And it was shocking. It was shocking for the entire country to wake up and see that raid. They did, you know, the flashbangs and SWAT team, and, you know, there must have been 200 cop cars out front and however many cops that rousted through Donald Trump's home, his wife's underwear drawer, because of these supposed dangerous documents that the former president had in his home. And they even showed us pictures of these alleged classified documents with these, you know, special envelopes. They were like laid out, sprawled out all over the floor as though Donald Trump had been willy-nilly, you know, throwing documents all over his home.
Using them to light cigars and shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Using them to, yeah. Right. And so I don't think he smokes, but yeah, that like that. Yes. Well, it turns out this week, shockingly, that it was a setup. I know now, Danielle, I hope you're sitting down.
It's a good thing I am sitting down.
It's a good thing you were sitting down because it turns out that not only was it first of all, illegal for them to say it was illegal for Donald Trump to possess those documents because he's the commander in chief and he has the ultimate security clearance. It could declassify documents anytime he wants to. He could possess them. He can do all of those things. But turns out that the NARA, NARA, National Archives something something, shipped the documents to Trump himself, themselves, and then the raid occurred. So this is an article from, of course, the Gateway Pundit, who actually does real news. President Trump on Tuesday, the title of the article, it was all a setup. The author of the piece is Christina Leyla. It was printed April 30th at 11:40 a.m. Jack Smith, Trump slams Jack Smith after bombshell documents prove coordinated legal assault by Biden, DOJ, and NARA. President Trump on Tuesday slammed Jack Smith in remarks outside a courthouse in New York City. Trump went after Jack Smith in a Truth Social post on Saturday night after bombshell documents revealed the Biden DOJ coordinated with the National Archives. It looks like deranged Jack Smith, a sick psycho, got caught. Dory and Rob Schmidt opening on Newsmax, amazing. Trump continued his, that was Donald Trump, always speaking with exclamation points, one of the reasons why I love him. You probably saw last night that Jack Smith got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. It was released late last night, and it's a big story, Trump said. The documents case is a hoax created by them for election interference purposes. That one looks like it's going asunder. Trump continued, the whole thing is a hoax. All of them are hoaxes. I think we get the point. Trump thinks it's a hoax. Okay, so here it is. One of my favorite researchers is a woman named Julie Kelly. Highly recommend you follow her on Twitter. She doesn't really have a Telegram account, but that's okay. But what they found was when someone gets accused for a criminal matter, the prosecution is required by law to share all of the information that they have with the defense so they can mount a defense, right? Well, they turned over, they gave the defense a whole bunch of documents, but they were all redacted. I mean, like completely redacted. So again, that's not okay. It's not legal for them to do that. The defense has the right to see what they're being charged with and the evidence that is against them.
Yeah, this is basic criminal law, like 101.
I have no idea how they thought they were going to get away with it. Well, it turns out by not having a court case either in D.C. or in New York, actually got a judge that is following the law. Her name is Judge Eileen Cannon. Every time she posts a ruling, we go, oh, thank God that he's down in Florida. Thank goodness he's down in Florida. And they tried everything they could because, of course, the raid happened at Mar-a-Lago. And they tried to get the case moved to Washington, D.C., but like, no, it happened here in Florida. You're going to keep it here in Florida. And Judge Eileen Cannon resisted all the ins and outs to get it transferred. And that's the only reason why this case is even moving forward, because they kept it in Florida. So where is this? I want the real article. This is the one where the one that I just read was only where Trump responded, but I want the real article. So where is it? Here it is. So federal agency had pallets of documents sent to Mar-a-Lago 1 year before the DOJ raid. Here it is in the Federalist. And this was written by Brianna Lyman. The Federalist is another one of those news organizations that I trust. And so this is how they did it. They shipped the documents themselves to Mar-a-Lago and then arrested him for having the documents. And they have the proof in all of that evidence that was redacted because Judge Eileen Cannon said, no, you can't do that. They opened it up and lo and behold, what they found was they set him up. Really was a setup. So this was done by Brianna Lyman, again, the Federalist. I want to give credit to the newspaper of record. It was printed on April 30th, and this is what she says. A federal agency worked with the Trump transition team to send two pallets of document boxes relating to former President Donald Trump's presidency to his Mar-a-Lago home 1 year before Special Counsel Jack Smith then raided the residence to look for classified documents. Smith indicted Trump in June of 2023. He waited all that time for allegedly mishandling classified documents 1 year after armed federal agents raided Mar-a-Lago in a search of such documents. The General Services Administration, GAC, was in talks with Trump's team both during and after his term regarding pallets of items from the president's tenure. And there's emails to back that up. The GSA informed Trump's transition team that there were six pallets that needed to be transferred from Virginia to Florida. Of the six pallets, two were designated to be sent to Mar-a-Lago and four to a West Palm Beach storage unit, according to emails. The two pallets to be delivered to Mar-a-Lago from an Arlington, Virginia facility contained document boxes, according to an email previewing the shipping charges. 26th of August, as I understand, we're ready to ship. This is Kathy Geisler, the Director of Office of Portfolio Management and Real Estate's Program Executive Execution Division that included Trump's aide, Bo Harrison. So here's what happened. And this is according to Julie Kelly, and she went through all the documents. Well, I'm pretty sure we never heard this part of the classified documents box story. And in it, it says one of the things, this is the evidence that they unredacted. FBI agent says GSA was holding large quantity of Trump's boxes and VA then ordered his team to come get them. It says, I want to talk to you about those boxes. This is a FBI agent talking to the Trump team and says, here, you ready to receive them? And it apparently they were going back and forth after that. So they shipped the documents to Trump themselves and then are going back and forth about which ones he's allowed to have. NARA. The Federalist asked NARA whether the pallets shipped by GSA included the documents that were later came during the raid of Mar-a-Lago, and NARA's media staff responded that the agency had no awareness about the contents of the materials on the pallets and had no involvement in the MOVE project that is referenced in the GSA emails. So they're backing up 10 steps saying, oh, we didn't have anything to do with it. They sent those documents to Trump and then arrested him for having possession of them.
That's pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. And so they're going after NARA big time to get them to answer those questions, and they don't have a choice.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
They'll push it as long as they can. We know they will. Because the closer to the election for them, you know, the better, especially with early ballot casting. I don't know if this was a dream or if I actually read this last week, but I thought I read something that Hillary Clinton was heavily involved in all of this too.
I caught wind of that too. I don't think I have any articles about it, but I caught wind of that too. But what they're saying is the sort of talk that I was reading in different articles and on different sites was that of course she would have been. And that also that this is just a continuation of what they've done to him the entire time since he came down the escalator. Okay.
Yeah.
And they've never stopped and they'll never stop.
Right.
But the good news is that we have a fighter. We have a champion that will also never surrender. So, by now he should be whimpering in a corner, but that's just not Trump. He just won't do it.
Right. Yeah. I also saw, maybe you'll cover this, but I heard that Hope Hicks took the stand in Trump's new hush money trial.
She did. And apparently it was not great for Trump, but it wasn't bad either. They're trying to go back to 2016, to the election.
Mm-hmm.
And say that, but for them covering up this Stormy Daniels affair, that it would have changed the election. Well, that wasn't true because it all came out. If you remember, they were throwing Hillary. There you go. That's the connection. Hillary Clinton brought the Stormy Daniels stuff front, the Oppo research about her as well.
Right.
She had her hands in that.
Okay, so, but I listened to a video of a woman who was in the courtroom when Hope Hicks took the stand. And
yes,
the prosecution went first. And as soon as the defense started, Hope started uncontrollably sobbing and shaking.
That's what I heard. Yes.
And nobody is quite sure why. Maybe it's to set up for the witness intimidation kind of stuff.
Yes. Yes.
But
that would follow. Okay. Because we're supposed to feel really sorry for Hope Hicks, but here's the problem. Hope Hicks has been impeached as a witness already. All the people they brought on this case have been impeached as witnesses. So during the, January 6th, whatever it was, when they didn't have any Republican rebuttal to any of the stuff that the January 6th committee, Hope Hicks was one of their star witnesses. And she testified that Trump had tried to storm the front of the limo and knock the guy out that was driving to get him to turn around. And none of it was true.
Yeah,
and she got she got impeached as a witness for that. And there was even another allegation that she made, and she got impeached. They proved that she was not telling the truth about either of these supposed quote unquote bombshell revelations in her testimony. So why she's there? Okay, so I watched. I hate this guy, that little pinhead lawyer Elias. Anyway, I loathe him. And he said, well, she got up on the stand and said that proved Trump's mens rea about what he was doing. Okay. To pay off Stormy Daniels was so that it would just go away. Well, that's what an NDA is. NDAs are not illegal. Certainly using his own personal money to pay off Stormy Daniels is not an election, campaign finance violation. He used his own money to create this NDA and to pay her off. And then she violated the NDA as soon as it happened. Trump,
right. And she owes him a bunch of money for doing that.
She got sued for violating her NDA she actually sued Trump, but got impeached during that trial. She lost, and he got lawyer's fees for it. And she owes him for all those lawyer fees. So every single one of these rats that's testifying have been impeached in some way. They're not credible witnesses because they've all lied under oath at various points of this.
Yeah. Oh, I think,
Hello.
Hi.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yes. Happy Cinco de Mayo to you, too. I'm outside. It's a little bit windy, and there was somebody using some kind of power tool, so I didn't want to get on air with too much background noise, but okay. Great to be here, and I've been listening. So,
hi, Kate. How are you?
What's that? I'm sorry. I both people at once, but I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here and very interested in this Hope Hicks business. Crying on the stand. Doesn't that remind you of Christine Blasey Ford a little bit?
Yes, it does.
Maybe they have the same acting teacher or something.
Yep,
same
they
groomer,
probably
perhaps.
Do.
Maybe they're using some sense memory techniques so they can cry really well, or they've got some onion in their pocket. I don't know. Good acting.
So the why Hope Hicks cried on the witness stand. The defense, here you go, Danielle, to your point, made the former Trump communications director cry. The prosecution seems to have gotten what it wanted. It says, after a drab week of testimony, and it's, believe me, it's been drab, and I'm going to read you an article about that, a bit of excitement finally entered the courtroom Friday when former White House communications director Hope Hicks showed up to testify against her former boss. There was no dramatic confrontation between Trump and the 35-year-old image of youth within the Trump administration. Hicks did not appear to look at her boss directly when entering or exiting the courtroom. The most dramatic moment came at the start of cross-examination when Trump attorney Emil Bove began to ask Hicks about her time at the Trump organization, and Hicks began to cry, seeming to wipe a tear away with a tissue, before taking a 10-minute break to recompose herself. So what made Hicks cry? It's honestly hard to say. All Bove says, I want to talk to you about your time at the Trump organization, and that was enough to set Hicks off. So he didn't even question her. She just started bawling. So there you go, right back to Christine Blasey Ford. I'm the victim here. Yeah, so I call bullshit. there's more on this. Liz Harrington did a great article about arresting the political opposition in the name of democracy, which is really what this is all about. Chris Mays told a lot. This is Liz Harrington, and it was done on Sunday, today, May 5th. She said, Chris Mays told a lot of lies in her statement announcing the unprecedented arrest of leaders. Okay, so they went and arrested a bunch of people in Maricopa County. These were the alternate electors. Okay, so they arrested a whole bunch of Trump supporters in just last week. And she said that who did they arrest? It says they arrested you're going to say who they arrested, but they're all Trump supporters. And it says that claims having contingent electors in the case, the courts did the right thing and actually heard the evidence of election fraud, like the alternate electors who were successful in 1960, was a criminal scheme. The scheme, had it succeeded, would have deprived Arizona voters of their right to have their votes counted for the chosen president. So it seems like so they're still doing it. They're arresting people just for being Trump supporters in the state of Arizona, which is a mess. I don't want that.
They just can't, Mom. They just cannot allow evidence to come forward that the election was rigged. They can't do it.
And it's still coming out. No matter how hard they try to push it down into the ground, the 2020 election will be re-adjudicated. So there is tons of evidence that it was stolen, and I think it's 62% of people in the United States believe that there were problems with the 2020 election. Now, where and you weren't even allowed to say that in 2020, like you got censored.
Well, clearly you're still not allowed to say it.
No, I know, but somehow or another, the information keeps bubbling to the top that enough people by this point are like 62%. That's a huge majority in the United States. You'd never get 62% on anything, right?
Well,
so that's good. We're getting there. It's still coming. We haven't stopped and we'll never stop. Watch what I say.
Well, we're headed into the next one. We're keeping our eye out for those shenanigans. What's brewing? What are they going to do to
it's
us next?
It's coming. It's coming. Yeah. They're doing a lot of stuff, though, to prevent it, which is good, and it makes me happy. They're putting a lot of stuff in place to protect our democracy, and I'm happy about that. So we'll see how Trump does. We'll see. Okay, so I'm going to start from the top, and that's probably the easiest way. So they're going to be a little bit different topics, but I just want to make sure that I get all of these because they were I did have a lot of stuff that I thought was important to share. The first one is cardiologists identify COVID-19 vaccine as possible cause of young professionals' heart problems. So we have the very first one, very first case where they're saying it looks as though adverse reactions caused this young, healthy woman. She's 29 years old. She was the director of international recruiting at Pulse Marketing, and she came forward with a personal health crisis that her cardiologist suggests may be linked to her COVID-19 vaccine. So vaccination. So we're heading in the right direction with those COVID vaccines. I found articles from, who was it? I'll come back to it, I promise. A whole state, I think, one of them said, that's it, these vaccines are dangerous, and we're going to ban them in our either state or country. I'll get there. Super good news. This one makes me so happy. Years ago, and Danielle and I were reading about it, there was a rape gang in Britain. And it was a whole town where they had taken all of the children and placed them in sexual servitude. And they got away with it for years. And if you questioned them, they said, you're being Islamophobic. Okay. This was, again, the Gateway Pundit, April 28th. Dozens of British Muslims sentenced in rape gang trial facing combined total of 346 years in prison. They found them guilty. And look how long, Danielle, this case has taken. Do you remember when this came up?
Is this Hampstead Heath by chance?
Yep. It's I think it is. Yorkshire, England.
Oh, okay.
But yes.
Okay.
Dozens of predominantly Muslim men have been sentenced to a combined total of 346 years for sexually abusing girls in Yorkshire, England. In a press release on Saturday, West Yorkshire police confirmed that 25 men had been sentenced for various sexual-related crimes. Dozens of men who sexually abused young girls in Kirklees have been jailed for a combined 346 years following a major investigation. Sentencing took place at Leeds Crown Court yesterday for the latest men convicted as part of Operation Toraway, a multiple-year investigation into the non-recent sexual exploitation of girls, young girls in North Kirklees. I'm not going to read their names. It doesn't matter, but they got a ton of time. The most notorious of these cases was the Rotherham grooming gang scandal, where around 1,400 children were abused by gangs of British Pakistani men between 1997 and 2013.
I'm going to have to just stop you right there for a second, please, and
go
I'll
ahead.
Get right back to it. But I believe with the current political climate going on, it's real easy for people to just blame one ethnic group of people. But again, let me just say, Pedogate is the sexual abuse of children and the systematic cover-up that follows. This is
the problem in this case. You're absolutely right. It has nothing to do with their ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
It has
but
to do with this.
But that's the way that they're going to frame it because of the political climate.
They also do this when
people die, right? So there was one, I think, like an archbishop or something like that, not too long ago, within the last few years, that died. And so they're like, oh, yeah, he died and he's horrible. And he raped like 1,000 people all by himself. And nobody knew, except they all knew. And
they all knew.
Mm-hmm. This is also
it
where
says,
Victoria is. Saville did his stuff, and I'll let you get back to it.
No, it's fine. But that's you're absolutely right. That is the point, because back then it was their status, though, as or their culture that protected that. Question what was going on. Well, you're being Islamophobic. It's the same thing with, mm-hmm. with sort of the priesty guys. This is very typical.
Yeah.
Of,
you're just anti-Catholic.
Predators. They get themselves under some sort of protected space, class, whatever you want to call it, and then they do their
can't
evil.
Be questioned.
Right.
I would like to add to that.
Please,
that's
go ahead.
Also, they also do things like, I think, child marriage and what's that called? Honor killings. Don't they try to hide behind culture with things that are clearly illegal in our culture?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
you're not allowed to question them. Right.
Female circumcision, that's the first thing that came to mind. That should be absolutely illegal. No one should be able to hide behind culture in America.
Agree.
Doing something like that to a human, a woman.
Agree,
anyway,
100%.
Yeah.
So it says, although some of the culprits were eventually convicted, many also evaded justice after police refused to act on reports of sexual abuse over fears they would be labeled as racist. So it took a long time for these cases to finally get adjudicated. Okay, so yay, that's good news. Here it is. P. Brigden, I told you it was a whole country, compared COVID vaccine deaths to the Holocaust. This was in Twitchy. The author is artist Angie. I need to log in. Let me log in. Here we go. Log in.
Where is this today?
Twitchy articles in Britain. The British MP, which is a prime minister or one of their, I guess, would be what close to what we would call a senator. MPs from all over Britain, and they come and they vote like our senators, okay? And it's so annoyed right now. Hold on a second.
Yeah, no problem. I thought it was Britain because Russell Brand actually talked about it. He did a video about it.
And it's cool, except for I want to read the freaking article and it won't let me.
Oh, shoot.
Okay, but it will because I'm a Twitchy subscriber. I just have to log in. It took me to the ad part, and the ad wouldn't go away. So now it is because I've logged in. So there.
Oh, good, good.
So it says, we hear a lot about COVID lockdowns and the consequences they had on the world economy, and we hear a lot about the vaccine. We do not often hear anyone outside of the United States bringing up the dangers and effects the vaccine may have had on many. So it shocked us when we saw that British MP, Member of Parliament, Andrew Brigden, made a bold statement comparing the possible death toll caused by the vaccine to the Holocaust. So this is from Vigilant Fox. He says, we've got to be somewhere between 10 and 20 million people have been killed by these experimental vaccines. British MPs are silent on this because... I have to go to Twitter now, and I don't want to go to Twitter. He says British MPs are silent on this because they've got their hands in the blood up to their armpits. The British MP stated that there is overwhelming evidence of mRNA vaccine harms and a clear link between the shots and an increased incidence of cancer. So we were worried about the clots. We kept calling them the clot shots, but they're connected now to something called turbo cancer. So you get a cancer diagnosis and you're dead in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was a little reluctant to. I'm sorry, I was a little reluctant to buy into the turbo cancer thing, but it doesn't seem to be going away. Sorry, go ahead.
It doesn't seem to be going away, does it? Okay. Anyway, so he's saying that there's a paper out of Japan with a clear link to it. We know why. It's the SV40, the simian virus 40 promoter region that Pfizer didn't disclose in their vaccines. I mean, there's a clear link with promoting cancer. So I have this in the good news report, and you know, I think you guys understand why. I mean, it's awful that people are dying, but I'm really, really glad that the evidence is coming out. And so hopefully these people will stop and will get some satisfaction from hopefully these people will never be able to have a bank account, much less. Okay. Also good news, the Independent Women's Forum files lawsuit against Biden's Title X, Title IV rewrite. We knew this was coming, and we're glad it did. The Independent Women's Forum has filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration following the rewrite of Title X. Isn't it Title IV? Title IV, 1X,
Title IX.
Four?
Isn't it Title IX?
Maybe it's Title IX. I don't know. That guts women's sports, makes women vulnerable in their locker rooms, opens up their scholarships and supports to men, and targets them for punishment if they harass a trans woman.
So hold on, just real quick. It's title in Roman numeral that is nine.
It is nine. Okay. So I never learned Roman numerals. I'm sure they probably tried to teach them to me in school, but it was just not my gig.
That's okay. I'll send you a YouTube video. It's very simple.
Okay. Good. We hope this rewrite of the rules gets thrown out by the courts, but we fully expect it will go all the way to SCOTUS. So we'll see how – we'll keep an eye on that case over the next couple of months and see how things go. Let's see. Where was I going next? We already did the criminalized stuff, which is super exciting. I'm glad that they're catching that asshole pulling his little shenanigans, Jack Smith and all of them. Every single one of them should be shot. Okay, I take that back. I don't mean that.
Prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
What she said. Here's some really great news and something that kind of confused me. Did Adam Schiff, okay, we know he took top slot in the Senate campaign, but didn't the baseball player get in too?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because it says in this article, it says his competitors are the other Democrats. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know he got in. I know he was like the second guy.
Yeah, he did get in, but probably what they're saying is that it's not going to matter. It's Steve Garvey, by the way. But it's not going to matter.
Why could I not remember that guy's name?
Yeah. But it should be. Okay, but that's weird because California is the top two. So maybe they did some shenanigans. Go ahead.
Wouldn't be surprised if they did shenanigans. But what we found out was evidence shows Adam Schiff falsely registered and eligibly voted and or committed mortgage fraud. Evidence shows that Adam Schiff, who is running for U.S. Senate in California, has committed election fraud, has ineligibly voted and or committed mortgage fraud. 1 year ago, in April 2023, we reported that ethics complaint was filed against Schiff. Today, we can report that Schiff's corrupt and even criminal acts involve much more. So they just did an ethics complaint, but now it's criminal, claiming he was both a citizen of California and Maryland. He cannot do that. In 2000, Schiff was elected to Congress and has served as a U.S. House member of from the state of California ever since. 24 freaking years. Ugh, barf. Schiff reportedly purchased a home in Maryland with his wife in 2003, stating they would occupy this home for 12 consecutive months as their primary residence.
That's
despite
not okay.
Despite this claim, Schiff continued to vote in California.
Ooh.
He refinanced his home in 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2013. Four times, amazing, state claiming the Maryland home was his primary residence. In 2009, a House Ethics investigation claimed that Schiff did this, and Schiff claimed it was an error, and he repaid the exempt taxes to the state of Maryland. He's still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So he can be charged criminally for that. Go ahead.
I don't know how this guy holds his seat for so long. In his district right now, there's a tuberculosis outbreak. And the public health and a public health emergency was just declared. Like,
yeah,
how could people think that that this guy has their best interest at heart? I just don't get it.
Have no idea. But this is great timing. This is
right.
Wonderful timing. And I hope that he you know, and I'm not guaranteeing anything because they seem to get away with like freaking everything that they get away with everything. So I don't know, but it's an election year, so we'll get to hear about it. So that's good news, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Kate, do you want to, any comments so far? I kind of feel like we should do comments as the stories go by so that we don't have to hold it till the
end. I'd be okay with that.
The only thing that occurred to me that you might be covering it is the James O'Keefe, former Veritas founder.
I don't have it. Do you have it?
Yeah, I put it in the discussion, but
yeah,
I can also resend it.
Yeah, please.
When
do.
I mentioned that there's probably going to be more shenanigans coming up for the next election, I think that applies to this discussion with somebody who doesn't know they're being filmed, who works for the CIA and the NSA, along with his assertion that they were watching Trump, monitoring him the whole time. So,
I want you guys to play that video. I really do.
Okay, we will.
It's a little bit hard to hear him. Yeah, he's a little bit hard to understand the way he's probably the person filming him is, you know, they're doing the best they can with the mic. But then there's also commentary about it that explains what's happening each step of the way. So, yeah, I think that really applies to the discussion. So that was the only thing that came to mind with this discussion so far. And thank you for
asking. Do you want to play that video clip now? But here's the thing. I told you I was going to be a little all over the place because I'm just reading them in the order that I put them in our little folder, because I was going to head on over to Blood Clots and Big Pharma next. A little out of order,
no,
told you.
Go ahead and do it. You know what, Kate? I think we might need to take a little time and thought into how to best play the audio. Because if you think about it, like when you watch it, there is, you know, the captions at the bottom. So maybe we can go through and you know, transcribe and do it that way. I don't know yet. Like if it's going to be bad quality audio, I don't know if it's going to be the best edifying way of doing it right at this point. But let's let Mom continue and then we'll talk about it and figure out how we're going to do it.
And I do have it. What immediately came to mind just really, really fast was that in the first few minutes, just not that long, if we don't go that deeply into the video that I sent you, there's just some clips of the guy talking, and then immediately James O'Keefe kind of just says what he just said. So that might be a way to do it. Kind of simple. Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, Mom, let's get back to that, and then we'll do the James O'Keefe and like after you're done with your report.
So again, a little disclaimer: I never take pleasure in reporting these stories, and they're you know, we even started off today by saying that because there wasn't very much good news, we were going to call it "Everything is Wicked and Stupid." When I report these COVID vaccine statistics and findings and research and revelations, as if we haven't known this stuff for, you know, a couple of years, I think it's really good news, because if the more the evidence comes out how bad these shots were, and the better off our world will be. And so just as a sort of a way to kind of let you know why I feel this way, another one of my friends that was shot crazy just passed away. And I was one of my coworkers from my old job that I left a year ago. And she was just the sweetest thing, came to my home a couple of times. Yeah, we were developing a relationship. And
it wasn't the one whose husband was helping to build the chicken coop, was it?
No.
Oh, no. All right.
This was from McAllister, sweetheart. And,
I know. But her husband was some kind of a carpenter, the one I was thinking of.
No, different family. No, it's not them, thank goodness. And they didn't take the shots. Neither one of them.
Oh, God. Oh, good.
Yeah. No, this was, if you remember, when I got to McAllister, there was this sort of environment of people being absolutely wacko over COVID. And when I first got the job, it was kind of going away a little bit, but the boss that hired me, her final question at my interview was, have you been vaccinated? And I said, no, that, you know, I wasn't going to do that. And that was the end of the interview. Okay. And then I got the job immediately, and COVID started. This lady was one of those really scaredy cat people, terrified, and was just giving me jazz. And then we got the COVID vaccine mandate, remember? And all employers will require their employees to get vaccinated. And I got an exemption, thank goodness. But it was a really rough time because they were giving me a really hard time. Well, Carla's not vaccinated and she has to go home. And I was being treated like I had, I don't know, boils on my face or something. Who knows? Yeah. They just really treated me differently.
Disease.
But the other employees were super compliant about getting the first shot and the 700th booster or the 15th booster, whatever the F it was at one time. And then come to find out that she just passed away. One of the my dear friends. And even towards the end, before I left my job, she was like, I'm not getting that other booster. I'm just not going to do it.
That's, that's so sad.
So I was very sad to find out that she had passed away.
We have a caller with their hand up. You guys mind? Can we let them in just real quick?
Please.
Okay, very good. Okay.
Please.
Hello, welcome to Seeds of Change. Who's this?
Yes, hi to everybody, GNR and mom, and all of you guys, Kate. This is Brother Mike. How are you?
We're doing great.
Hey, welcome to
calling.
The show.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all. I mean, you see, you are right. You know, this vaccine really, so far, 8 billion people around the globe, only maybe a couple of billion people were able to, they vaccinated with COVID-19. And over 6 billion, they have not. So if if it's really good, it's supposed to be a great pandemic of 2019, 2020, and a little bit beyond. So why African people are not, why people in Africa are not vaccinated? Why people in Asia are not vaccinated? So this was only the biggest scam on the history of mankind. And they wanted us to lock down. Go ahead, please.
No, I don't think you're going to get any disagreement from anyone on this show.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you very much.
It was the biggest
you
scam.
You know, these people are just, now World War III started already from Ayatollahs, and they have sent 350 missiles to Israel. And, you know, these people, before things goes into effect, they put their own agent. Ayatollahs came in 1979. We didn't know even Ayatollahs who they were. Ayatollah Khomeini born in India. And then while Shah of Iran exiled him because he was a troublemaker in Iran, so he went to Iraq in Najaf. And then from Najaf, he was trained in Gaza and with the same PLO. And then they brought him to Iran with Air France free of charge. With all the
Are you talking about under the Arafat kind of time frame?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. And then what happened, they put their own, like a chess game, you know, they put their own people much, much more years before into the, you know, position. So now they put Ayatollahs, and then Khomeini, we know who was he. He wasn't even Iranian. He took over the Iran. And then on top of it, he died. And then he was replaced by somebody else, you know, that he mm-hmm. also has a very close name to, like him, Khamenei. Khamenei is also trained in Gaza with the PLO. And also he is in charge of Iran right now. And he ordered the attack on Israel. So wherever you see, you know, fingerprints of Ayatollahs all over, from Iraq to Houthis to Gaza, Hezbollah in Beirut, in Lebanon. And, you know, it's very unfortunate that these people, they know exactly what they want to do. They want to reduce mass population from 8 billion to under 500 million. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Yeah. That's also why they blew up the Georgia Guidestones, because their whole plan was right there on those tablets. Mike, is it Mike, your name?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes,
okay, thank
yes.
you. Mike, would you mind hanging out just a little bit and let Mom get through the good news report? And then I would love to get back to this topic. It is so crucial.
It's a great topic.
So important. But would you mind if we get through the good news report and then get back to this?
No, I'd like to wait with you. And also we will go to the PLO occupation of the universities in United States of America.
Oh, you're giving me goosebumps over here. Thank you so much, sir.
Totally.
We'll get back to you in just a few minutes, okay?
Sure.
Well, I really can't top that, but I do want to just say that COVID finally, the big pharma finally admitted that their COVID-19 vaccines can cause blood clots. And our friend Mike, we have considered for the longest time, they're trying to depopulate the earth. They think we're using too many resources. And so for whatever reason, but they've had to admit that that the COVID-19 vaccines do cause blood clots, and that we're going to see more people die, which is very, very sad. Some actual good news, judge did give Trump permission, and this is in quotes, to attend his son's high school graduation after all that kerfluffle where he said, no, you're not going, and I got into a Facebook fight with one of Danielle's followers and said that
not
I'm
a
sure
follower
that
I just
judge...
have a public account and she just opened up her big mouth all over my Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't sure. I didn't want to offend anybody, but I was like, you know, I'm sure this guy has let people go to important dates. And then, you know, right after the trial started, somebody had a dentist appointment and the judge, freaking one of the jurors, let him go. Anyway, the good news is that he did give Trump permission, which makes me want to barf, to attend his 18-year-old son's high school graduation. Let's see. The World Health Organization's pandemic treaty ignores COVID policy mistakes. That's not great news. So they're still trying to, just so you know, the reason why it's in my stack is that they're still trying to get all the countries in the world to agree to this pandemic treaty, and it is just filled with so much garbage. It's not even funny, and I can't take it. I just can't take it. And so, in the treaty, Jay Bhattacharya says that they left out all of the mistakes that they made, and you know, we can use that word really loosely about mistakes. We, you know, me and Mike agree it was deliberate. Let's see. So you did ask about what's happening in the trial a little, and I guess there was a really bad day for the prosecution during this week when in the hush money trial, whatever you want to call it. I'm just going to read quickly why they think it was a really bad day. This is Victoria Taft, and this is PJ Media, which is part of that big media group that I have a subscription to. It's got Twitchy, it's got PJ, it's got Red State, it's got Town Hall. This was on May 3rd. It says, it's hard to imagine a worse day in court than having a reliable witness come in, throw his own client, Stormy Daniels, under the New York subway train, and then completely disembowel the prosecution's case, at least the one they're selling to the jury. That's what happened Thursday in the Hush Trump case in Manhattan. The Get Trump prosecutor's big coup of a witness, Stormy Daniels' attorney, Keith Davidson, basically pantsed DA Alvin Bragg, his assistant DA, and the lead prosecutor, Matthew Colangelo, in front of God and everybody. First, Davidson threw his client, the former adult movie copulator, under the B train by leaving her naked and exposed, conniving extortionist she's always appeared to be in the shakedown of Trump. I'm not going to read the whole article, but basically the ex-lawyer said that he thought ex-lawyer of adult film star actress Stormy Daniels testified Thursday that he thought Donald Trump was going to lose the 26th presidential election and pressed Trump's ex-lawyer Michael Cohen to settle the payment before losing leverage. So the whole premise was that he did it to win the election, and they're advising him, you're probably not going to lose. You probably are going to lose the election, and you should just, you've got a little leverage right now, just pay it now. And so that just goes completely in opposite of what, and this was their star witness. Whoops.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make a bit of sense, but here's the thing. That means that they didn't prepare, they couldn't prepare, and because there's no crime. There was lots to do with a whistleblower coming forward about what happened on January 6th. Apparently, a D.C. National Guard whistleblower claims Trump was stripped of his commander-in-chief powers on January 6th. So they effectively committed a coup, Milley and a bunch of other generals, against Donald Trump. It says
they always accuse the other person of what they're doing.
Yep, and so it says that they ignored his orders. They took over the government that day. He claims that Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time, and then Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy were plotting to disobey any orders handed down by Trump because they unreasonably assumed the then president was going to break the law. That was their reason for ignoring his orders and effectively committing a coup on January 6th.
Oh, guilty before proven innocent.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, how convenient.
They assumed that he was going to do something bad, so we better not follow his orders. They absolutely cannot do that. My final piece, there's actually two. So a San Diego jury convicted two Antifa militants of felony conspiracy to riot in connection with the brutal attack on Trump supporters. This happened in 2021, and some Trump supporters went down there before the, you know, was it in 20?
Was it in
happened?
PB?
I take that back. It was the one in PB. It wasn't in 2021. I'm wrong. It was in 2021.
For the non-natives, that's Pacific Beach.
Pacific Beach, right?
Yeah, in San Diego.
So, okay, so then it must have happened after the election, obviously. In January 2021, a mob of Antifa, this was about the time of January 6th, a mob of Antifa terrorists assaulted a small group of Trump supporters in San Diego, California. Antifa goons attacked the Trump supporters with pepper spray after a verbal confrontation escalated. They got convicted. A bunch of them had already pled guilty, but these last two took theirs to the box and lost. Bye-bye. So that's good news. And then my final piece, of course, is always going to be a Pedogate article. Jeffrey Epstein's Black Book with 221 additional high-profile names is being sold. Jeffrey Epstein, I have no idea how they're getting away with that shit.
What?
It says Jeffrey Epstein is going to name names again. A mysterious black book believed to belong to the late pedophile financier, which revealed the names and addresses of 221 previously undisclosed people, is going up for auction, and bidders are being assured that their identities will be kept secret. So keep this in mind. It could fetch up to $200,000 or more, the auction house owner told the Daily Beast, which first reported the story. Of course, they said among the famous names reportedly in the book, they haven't seen the freaking book. Donald Trump's number one. Okay, of course. So here's what's going to happen. One of the people that's in this book is going to buy it, and it will never see the light of day again. The book was reportedly found on Fifth Avenue in the East Village by a female musician in the 1990s, but how it came to be there remains unclear to this day. What is clear is that the book names 349 people, 221 of whom were not named in a later, more famous black book that Epstein kept. The book was the subject of an in-depth investigation by Business Insider in 2021. Many of the people contacted by insiders said their relationship with Epstein was either fleeting or non-existent. Katsimatidis told the Daily Beast that he only met Epstein once. Katsimatidis did not immediately respond to the post request for comment on Friday. So he's one of the people right below Trump on the list. So supposedly
okay,
go ahead. There's another
okay.
black book. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Sure. I have a hard time with this, and you know that I'm totally on board with what is going on with Epstein, and that there were – he definitely owned a pedophile island, and he definitely was in touch with a lot of very high-level people. This is where I push
yes.
back, though. Okay, so I am a member of a yacht club. I was previously a member of more than one yacht club.
Right.
When you're a member of a yacht club, you are issued a book with all of the phone numbers and addresses of all of the other people who are in yacht clubs. Okay, so let's just say that Dennis Connors, he's a famous sailboat racer, right? Let's say that
yep.
he was, you know, accused of being a pedophile. And they went, the police went into his house and they found his black book with all of his phone numbers in there. Potentially, my name would be in there.
Right.
And so does that mean that I'm a pedophile, or does that mean that everybody
no.
in Epstein's book is a pedophile? No, it doesn't. So, you know, and of course, like, I get big pushback on that, like, oh, well, you must be protecting the pedophiles. No, I'm telling you how private clubs work. And it was very clear that Trump was a member, Epstein was a member of Mar-a-Lago. So, of course, he would have Donald Trump's information in there, along with many other people. We can't just, this is like the definition of circumstantial evidence. We can't
exactly.
say that everybody who's in,
mm-hmm.
you know, Epstein's book is a pedophile. We can say that they were possibly members of the same networking groups. And that's why, like, you know, I know this is a very heated topic, but we do have to follow the facts, and we do have to realize that not everybody who is in Epstein's book is an actual pedophile. That's
of
all
course.
I have to say about that.
Good point.
No, you're absolutely right. And I didn't even know there was another black book. Okay, so this is kind of odd. Popping up now, okay? All right,
well,
so that's what I got. Go
seems
ahead,
weird
say it again.
That it just seems weird that it's suddenly up for auction
mm-hmm.
and not being considered evidence or treated with any kind of...
What the hell?
You know,
exactly.
Police
right.
attention.
Because it's going to be released in the court of public opinion, and that really is enough for a lot of people to say that they're pedophiles, right? And that's why we don't go on the court of public opinion. We go on the actual courts.
Yes. Agreed.
All right, Mom, anything
all
else?
All right, well, that's
you go
all I got for today. Okay. I want you guys to have
well,
a great week,
wonderful.
And I will bring more good news next week.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Love you.
Love
yeah,
you guys.
Thank
peace.
You so much.
Bye.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So, you know, Mike, you've got such good insight. I don't I don't know if we should go into that first, or I do have, you know, some other stuff to talk about, mostly about mm-hmm. free speech in America. But mm-hmm. but Mike, I you know, you're you know, just a wealth of knowledge here. I maybe we should let you have the floor for a little bit, because the topic that you're bringing up is so important. That let me ask you, are you, it seems like you have a little bit more of an understanding of the history that than the average American does. And what you were saying about people being, you know, pro Hamas, not pro Hamas, but like basically behind Hamas, it seems like you've got, you know, a good understanding of that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that before we talk about what's going on in America with all of these college protests?
Yeah, sure. Indeed. We will connect all the dots all together, what's going on in the United States of America, unfortunately. You know, first of all, this Hamas supporters, first of all, you know, after they have came, study here as a guest, and we are the country for the guest, and they are treating us like crap. I mean, many of them are maybe U.S. citizens, or maybe many of them maybe not. But the question is that these people, they have had training. They have had at least 1 year plan for this day that they do that. And
so we're talking about October 7th, planning for October 7th?
Exactly. Similar to October 7th, you know, they pre-planned everything. And same thing what happened recently on all colleges from UCLA to Columbia College and all colleges, universities around the United States, at least over close to 50, I think. So, you know, the many of these protesters, you know, they're leaders. They call themselves are the leaders, and other people, they follow them. And they say, you need to do this. The other ones say, yes, we will do it. You know, so these are the leaders, you know, they keep occupying our colleges, universities. People cannot go to their universities, colleges, or to graduate, etc. And, you know, this was the, you know, it was for sure. I can tell you that. Because
yeah, definitely
was,
both, you know, I would say. I'd say there's two groups. More than one intention taking place with these movements. I have something also to share on that today.
Yeah, for sure. I do think that we're, you know, it's interesting because I rarely find myself on the same side as BLM and, you know, the Soros kind of movements, but there is definitely something going on that is pre-planned for sure. But go ahead, Kate.
Oh, I've got some stuff to share from Max Blumenthal, who was some time at some different campuses and talking to the students. So whenever we want to dip into that, I would love to share that, or mm-hmm. I can just kind of give my own thoughts on it.
Sure. Should we do that first, or should we do that Jimmy Dore first? What do you think is the best order?
You know, go ahead and play that one, and then I read what the flyers that they have put in all colleges and we can read about the flyers that they have put and what they have said And that would be after your part, I mean, the play that you are going to do right now, please.
Yeah, because I think that once we're done playing these audio clips, I think that we're all going to be on the same page. There, you know, there's definitely some infiltration going on college campuses, but there's also definitely some grassroots movements who are like, look, we just stop killing babies. You know, like I think we can all agree that the aftermath of October 7th in Gaza has been catastrophic for those people. Is that, you know, or am I wrong about that?
And also, Israel knew that it was going to, the attack was going to happen, and they let it happen. There's documentation of that as well. So you have to examine both sides. And, you know, whoever is helping to organize the movement seems to be, if we're talking about George Soros, seems to be instrumental in both sides is what I'm looking at.
I really agree.
We don't know.
I think is Ayatollah's also helping, and Hamas is helping themselves, and you know, Hezbollah of the Lebanon, Beirut, they helping also. So it's there are so many hands in it, you know. Unfortunately,
yeah.
It's not only one hand. That much I can say you.
Yes, and there's different agendas too, I'm sure.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah, it's not easy to pigeonhole what's going on or say it very precisely and with brevity. Like, there's a lot to unpack here.
Right, because convoluted is the name of the game. We want this to be fuzzy. We don't want there to be a direct tie to what's going on. You know, I mean, and honestly, like, if I may say, I believe that the same thing that's going on with Hamas is the same thing that's going on with ISIS. I think that there are major superpowers that train them, create them, arm them, fund them, and then say, oh, look, they're just, you know, they're supervillains.
What I was finding is that you and I, but that the CIA or the elite powers that be, they also created Hamas.
Well, right, exactly. Netanyahu, actually, there is a speech from Netanyahu. Maybe not a speech. I want to make sure that I'm clear about this, where Netanyahu is saying, is either in writing or a speech, where Netanyahu is saying, we need to support Hamas because they're taking out our enemies. And, you know, like, I'm not saying that Hamas is good, but I am saying that it does seem like the same kind of tactics are being portrayed with ISIS as, you know, as it is with Hamas.
Yes, they're being used as controlled opposition, perhaps, to an extent. What the end goal is, who knows?
What do you think about that, Mike?
You know, it's bad policy, unfortunately.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you know, it's anything is possible. Anything it can happen. Right now, Los Angeles, tomorrow, there is a mock exercise that they are going to do for EMP explosion over Los Angeles. And they, you know, and then they are going to see how much radiation can go, how much destruction, how much is the first wave, second wave, and third wave areas are. So, I mean, we have a map of it also on the Hal Turner radio show. And so, you know, basically, you know, yeah, it's United States is preparing for World War III. I mean, you know, tomorrow the F-16 is delivered to Ukraine. And so there is a new red line, again, we are passing. I mean, it seems we are poking the bear a lot, And so something is going to happen sooner than later, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And who are going to be the problems? We, the people of the earth, you know?
Yeah.
Not them. They have their own bunkers. They go to their own bunkers for as many years they want to, 10 years. But other people, they don't have bunkers, you know?
No. Yeah. And if somebody, I live in San Diego. I live, you know, like 100 miles south of Los Angeles. So this is definitely something that I'm paying attention to. Everybody should get their Faraday cages ready. Like, make sure that you've got your solar panels. Make sure that you've got your batteries, storages ready. Like, this is part of getting ready for what's coming. We know that they're planning these things. And you know, I guess we can say that these protests are almost a distraction, and we almost shouldn't pay attention to them. But we should.
Absolutely.
Because,
well, they're being used to curtail free speech. So,
yes,
we need to be able to communicate with one another and not be under threat of law in doing so. So, I hear what you say about a distraction. It is getting quite alarmist. But on the other hand, we've got to pay attention and not just get emotional and side with one side or the other, but just look at it objectively. From 30 paces away, what is really happening here?
Exactly right.
Are we losing our freedom? Yes. I found a little article, if you want me to read a tiny bit, just about, it's just so weird. It's from the Washington Post 2014 about Netanyahu and Netanyahu, who is prepared to wage a protracted battle in the battered Gaza Strip as it seeks to crush the capabilities of the Islamic militant group Hamas. So that's sort of what this article leads with. And then it says here, to a certain degree, the Islamist organization Hamas, whose militant wing has rained rockets on Israel the past few weeks, has the Jewish state to thank for its existence. Launched in 1988 in Gaza at the time of the first intifada or uprising, with a charter now infamous for its anti-Semitism, keep in mind this is the Washington Post, and its refusal to accept the existence of Israeli state. But for more than a decade prior, Israeli authorities actively enabled its rise. So I could go on, but we could also just kind of put a pin in this and say, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Hamas
is
the creation of the state of Israel. What?
Right, exactly. And honestly, I love the older articles about this, because right now there's so, like, all of our information is so marred with the current thing, with the current agenda, that I very much welcome these older, so 2014, 10 years ago, perspectives on it. So, yeah, please continue.
At the time, Israel's main enemy was the late Yasser Arafat's Fatah Party, which formed the heart of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO. Fatah was secular and cast in the mold of other revolutionary leftist guerrilla movements waging insurgencies elsewhere in the world during the Cold War. PLO carried out assassinations and kidnappings, and although recognized by neighboring Arab states, was considered a terrorist organization by Israel. PLO operatives in the occupied territories faced brutal repression at the hands of the Israeli security state. Meanwhile, the activities of Islamists affiliated with Egypt's banned Muslim Brotherhood were allowed in the open in Gaza. Sorry, my cat is about to knock something over. A radical departure from when the Strip was administered by the secular nationalist Egyptian government of Gamal Abdel Nasser. Egypt lost control of Gaza to Israel in 1967, Arab-Israeli War, which saw Israel also seize the West Bank. In 1966, Nasser had executed Saeed Qutb, one of the Brotherhood's leading intellectuals.
the Israelis saw Qatib's adherents in the Palestinian territories, including the wheelchair-bound Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, as an useful counterweight to Arafat's PLO. When I look back at the chain of events, I think we made a mistake when an Israeli official who had worked in Gaza in the 1980s said in a 2009 interview with the Wall Street Journal's Andrew Higgins, but at the time, nobody thought about the possible results. Really? Higgins' article is worth reading in full. He goes on to outline the type of assistance the Israelis initially gave Yassin, whom the PLO at one time deemed a collaborator, and Gaza's other Islamists. Israel's military-led administration in Gaza looked favorably on the paraplegic cleric who set up a wide network of schools, clinics, a library, and kindergartens. Yassin formed the Islamist group Mujama al-Islamiya, sorry if I'm butchering that, which was officially recognized by Israel as a charity and then in 1979 as an association. Israel also endorsed the establishment of the Islamic University of Gaza, which it now regards as a hotbed of militancy. So I guess, am I hearing that Israel was helping them fight Egypt, and they helped Hamas? I don't know. I don't want to take up too much time.
No. That's totally relevant. But Mike, do you have an answer for that or an opinion on
yes,
that?
Yes. You know, it seems maybe first they created Hamas for their own benefit, but later on, somewhere, as a bad politics, it went wrong, and the Hamas then is not listening to Israel anymore, and then become their enemies, number one right now. So again, as a bad politics, we see everywhere. I mean, as we see the Hamas students, and many of these people are not the students of the universities. They came from far away, as California and Oregon and many other states. They went there. And one of the flyers here, it says, "Inter the temporary from New York to Gaza and across Carter Island, disrupt, reclaim, destroy. Zionist business interests everywhere in the United States. Debt to Israel, real estate, debt to America, UN school. Squat or rot, do what you want. Long live the Intifada." So, you see, I mean, these people, I mean, they have a program for Islamization of United States of America. I mean, you can go to YouTube and say, search under Muslim Shocks New York with the truth. And then you will see what they're telling to the people. It starts from one point, you know. They in New York are saying that we are coming for you guys. We are going to conquer United States of America. We are going to make the Islamization of United States of America. And in another video, you can go, it says, in 50 years, we will enslave you. And this Muslim scholar says that once we conquer the United States of America, what we will do, we will give you two options. One option is you become a Muslim voluntary, and you be part of us. We will protect you all the time. And then second option is you have to give us jizya. Jizya means tax. Islamic tax. But he's laughing when he says little tax. I don't know what little tax is. Is it means 50% of your income you have to give us in order to protect you? You know, these are because they lie.
Who's saying this?
Nobody,
the flyers.
Who's saying this?
This one is a scholar. If you YouTube it, say in 50 years we will in a slave.
Who's saying it?
This is a Muslim.
Hamas?
This is one of those Muslim scholars says we will conquer and enslave you in 40 to 50 years.
But don't you think it's weird, Mike? Mike, don't you think it's weird that the U.S. was funding ISIS as moderate rebels in Syria? And now they're kind of, well, I've heard they've funded both sides in Israel and Hamas. And, I mean, didn't they also help to overthrow the secular governments in various places and empower the Muslim Brotherhood? So what's the game? Is this not the voice of the CIA? Am I being too general?
The game is like a chess game. Before they do anything, they push their own people, maybe years back, like Ayatollahs, like Hamas, like Hezbollah, like this guy. I mean, I think he's in Pakistan.
Al-Qaeda.
The way, I mean, it seems they say in the back, Punjabi, and probably he's from Punjab. This scholar saying that. It says the message to America. I mean, in 50 years we will. And then after he says, if you don't take the second options, of course, paying tax. Well, I don't know how much. He says little tax. I don't know what
right.
he meant.
Mm-hmm.
By
we hopefully we can avoid that.
It can be 5%, 10%, 50%. God, no. And then he says, if you don't accept these two options, he says, we will enslave you, and then we will cut your head off. So this is already in YouTube, and we have investigated. You know, we are journalists, and we were just shocked to see that this YouTube, if we go and talk about the virus, COVID-19, they shut us off right away. But this guy, he can come and say everything like
this. He can say whatever he wants.
And
It's
very weird. Again, it's a bad politic of YouTube. YouTube, the freedom of speech, but not for us. For them, yes.
With that, I would like to play an audio. It's not too long. It's about, 12 minutes. Depending on your perspective, this may be a little bit triggering. And I welcome you to, Mike, to please let me know, anything that you think is wrong with this. But is that okay? May I just play a quick
please,
audio?
Please, yeah.
Awesome.
Please do.
Thank
you.
Yeah, I have
here we go. Is this Jimmy Torres?
Yes. Okay, so here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, we'll see you May 11th in Denver, Colorado. Go to jimmydore.com for a link for tickets. So Rebecca Weiner, head of the NYPD's Counterterrorism Bureau, identifies one of the threats that's...
How's that audio?
Perfect.
It's pretty good. Very
awesome.
Good. Very nice.
Supposedly necessitates the Columbia raid. So you saw how all the cops went in there like it was a... And a mainstreaming of rhetoric. So mainstreaming of rhetoric associated with terrorism.
By who? Who associated with terrorism? You?
So Michael Tracy says, no question, this is recasting political speech as terrorism.
Yeah, no shit.
Here we go. Here she is. She's gonna, political speech is now. So that, I told you that. All they have to do is say you're a terrorist because Barack Obama signed that law that repealed habeas corpus, and they can throw you in jail without a charge indefinitely. It's called indefinite detention.
Rebecca, you
leaner. All they have to do is say that you're a terrorist, and you can be, now you're a political terrorist.
They're comedians, if you didn't. Okay, here we go.
because you're using terrorist speech. They can say if you protest on pipeline, you're considered an eco-terrorist. If you put misinformation on Twitter, or Facebook or Instagram, you can be considered a cyber terrorist. All they have to do is say you're a terrorist now, and they can throw you in jail.
The movie Brazil.
I didn't see that movie.
Oh.
There we are.
This is not about students expressing ideas. It is about a change in tactics that presents a concern and a normalization and mainstreaming of rhetoric. And I'm not just talking.
So that's exactly what ideas are. Ideas are expressed in rhetoric, meaning words. So she's saying this isn't about censoring speech. Well, let's listen to what she said.
This is not about students expressing ideas.
That's exactly what this is about. And she's gonna betray it right now. She's gonna tell you.
It is about a change in tactics that presents a concern and a normalization and mainstreaming of rhetoric and
of words.
What change in tactics? It looks like the same tactics I've seen my whole life of protesting.
This is
where they go sit in the fucking thing with signs.
They've always done.
What change in tactics are you talking about?
Well, here's what you're gonna say.
Just talking about language. I'm now talking about tactics.
Tactics.
What shifted our response yesterday.
Which tactics?
But a normalization and mainstreaming of rhetoric associated with terrorism that has now become pretty.
So she's talking about. She's talking about language. She goes, "This isn't about language. This is about rhetoric." That's what rhetoric is. Rhetoric is language.
Common on college campuses, right? You see people wearing headbands associated with foreign terrorist organizations. This happened in October when you had a viral TikTok reissuing of Osama bin Laden's 2002 letter to America.
Can I not read that?
You can't read that. That's illegal now. So anything they don't like is now terrorism. They don't like if you have an idea that they don't like is now terrorism.
You know, I'm sorry to keep pausing it. We're only 3 minutes in, but this, I have not read this letter to America by Osama bin Laden. I do know that he was a CIA asset. Do you know that, Mike, that Osama bin Laden was a CIA asset?
He also could be MI6 asset as well,
yes.
Too.
Yes.
Because usually if you work for one, you work for many other ones.
You work for
too.
All of them. I really appreciate that you understand that you know that. I never read that letter. But the fact that I'm not allowed to read that letter really upsets me as an American, as somebody who is supposed to be protected. Under the idea that I can read and educate myself any way that I see fit, now all of a sudden I'm not allowed to understand this biggest terrorist attack in United States history. I'm not allowed to understand or read the words of the person who supposedly did it. Does that seem odd?
We are in the same page as you. You are.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so here we go.
Are there really people who consider themselves right-wing conservatives who are on board with them making it illegal to express ideas? The whole point of freedom of speech is that you don't want to defend the speech that you agree with. Because that doesn't need defending. You need defending of the speech that you find outrageous, the speech that pisses you off, the speech that offends you. That's the speech that needs protecting. Nobody needs speech that everybody agrees. Nobody needs defending of speech everyone agrees with.
Yeah. I have heard
and,
no, yeah.
And, yeah, puppies and apple pie are great. We don't need that speech defended, you know? Okay.
So now, and remember when they said your speech on January 6th, that was terrorism. Now they're saying the same thing about these people. So you have to stand up. So if you consider yourself a right-wing conservative who cares about freedom and liberty, you have to stand up for these people who you might hate. You might hate these protesters. You might think they're all communists and Marxists, although you say the people they're protesting are communists and Marxists, which is the administration of the League schools. You have to stand up for everybody's freedom of speech, especially when it offends you, especially when you don't agree with
it. Especially when it offends
you. Otherwise, you have no right to demand it when it's your turn.
So but they're using rhetoric and wearing headbands.
They're wearing headbands.
I mean, I do understand that some fashion crimes should not be tolerated, but the headband thing is a little weird.
You can't wear headbands, and you can't have TikTok videos.
Yeah,
they're
saying
that the headbands are anti-Semitic, right? The scarves.
Yeah, they're signs of terrorism.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. I saw somebody post that on Facebook in all seriousness, saying how sad it was that that was now a sign of anti-Semitism. I swear to you, I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah, agreed. All right, here we go.
Associate my balls with your mouth.
This is what an authoritarian Nazi looks like. You want to see what they look like? This is called the banality of evil. That's what they look like. They look like nice little white women.
It's a larger concern. It's separate from what happened yesterday, but they're related. We do not want ideas. We do not want campuses, which are where people are.
She just said ideas.
We don't want ideas.
She said this
isn't about ideas. She couldn't help herself because that's what this is about. We don't want ideas.
Don't want you thinking on the college campus.
We can't have wrong think. That's called wrong think. Right out of Orwell.
So you know why this is, right?
And so again, if you consider yourself a right wing conservative, this should drive you crazy, because it will be used against you. Go ahead.
Okay.
But we all know right-wing conservatives out there that are like, go Israel. You know, like, let's shut these students up. Yeah, go police. Let's just, you know, take them all down. We don't need to hear what they have to say because they're Marxists and terrorists, right? It's very, very weird that we've got so many people who supposedly, you know, represent this right-wing conservative movement who just lived through January 6th, and they're out there saying, no, shut these punks up. They don't deserve the right to free speech.
It takes to wake them up?
Yeah, right.
So the whole Ivy League system has to go. It has to go. It's always been a corrupt piece of shit for the master class to control you. That's what this bickering and this hungry hippos fucking game for the marbles is, because they know that's so your Ben Shapiro's who went to Harvard, and they know the levers of power. All these little fucking creeps and dilettantes are scrambling for the levers of power.
Yeah.
And they pass little shitty rules. So how about this? Cut the Ivy League out of everything. I'm not impressed. I have to say, I'm not really impressed with any of them. The last time you're like, Harvard guy blew me away.
I mean,
with his great ideas.
The Ivy League does wonders for comedy. Look at Conan O'Brien.
People that drop out. Geraldo was a Harvard law guy.
Okay, here we go.
Supposed to be learning and being in a conducive environment for all of the things that we do in schools, being turned into places where people are committing vandalism, property damage, and committing crime.
That's already illegal.
You just said BLM was cool.
Hey, if people are doing that, those are already crimes. If people are committing vandalism and property crimes, those are already crimes. That's not what this is about.
These are rhetorics, but they did property rhetoric.
She says, I'm not talking about language, I'm talking about tactics now, and that's what shifted our response. She then goes on to list language, speech as her examples, the wearing of clothes, and a TikTok video.
Oh, okay, wait, this is what all this bullshit, is it okay to call for genocide? At no point did I hear anyone call for that.
No.
Okay, what I heard was, you interpret something how you want it,
that's
and
right.
tell me,
and,
like you're a fucking mind reader,
that's
like
right.
we're dating. Yeah, I don't want to hear what I think. I'll tell you what I think, bitch.
So, and you want to know who she really is?
Oh.
She also happens to be an adjunct professor at Columbia, where she imparts her wisdom in the extremely credible and legitimate fields of terrorism and internet.
I'm not sure if they say this this again in the video, but they did previously. She is an NYPD spokesperson. So this NYPD spokesperson is also an adjunct professor at Columbia. Do we see the web that's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
Security studies. Her entire distinguished career, no doubt, led up to this defining, treacherous moment. Here she is, adjunct associate professor of international and public affairs, Rebecca Weiner. Also, she's an NYPD official, Rebecca Weiner, who cited outside agitators as the reason for the NYPD raids, but offered no transparency.
Outside agitators. Okay.
Columbia adjunct. The unit she leads came under fire. Guess what? The unit she leads in the NYPD came under fire in 2010 for what? For spying on Muslims in New York.
Oh, Claire Danes from that spy show? This is like one of them kind of chicks?
This person says, I know that they did that because I sued the unit for spying on me. That's Assad from New York City. Rebecca Weiner is a Columbia professor who spied on students and demonized them as terrorists in her dual role as NYPD counterterror and intel deputy chief.
And again, in 2010, right? So that's why I really appreciate these much older stories, right? Like, these things have been set up for quite some time. And I'm not saying that this particular, incident is... what has been set up for all of these years. But in 2010, this adjunct professor was out there spying on Muslims. Here we go, 3, 2, 1.
NYPD division has spied on Muslim students outside New York City and has an office in Tel Aviv.
This is a spy.
That's great. Columbia is completely compromised.
Yeah, well,
that's from Max Blumenthal.
As are all the fucking Ivy League schools.
Hofstra hired a safety director named Geraldine Hart, who trained with the IDF via the ADL. How many more of these are there? You want to see? See firsthand accounts from past U.S. law enforcement participants in ADL's leadership seminar. Suffolk's top cop, Geraldine Hart, learns counterterrorism tactics in Israel. Chief returns from studying counterterrorism in Israel. Hofstra using education to fight anti-Semitism. Public safety director Geraldine Hart told the Advocate. So these colleges, here's Mike Johnson. Here's what he says.
What's happened at the campus, the escalation, the violence, the necessity of the NYPD coming in to break it all up, never had to happen. We need administrators to step up, university officials to step up and do their job. The most basic function that they have is the safety and security of their students.
Too far at this point for the FBI to look into this or not necessarily?
No, I wouldn't say. I think the FBI needs to be all over this. I think they need to
Now we love
look
the
at
FBI.
The
now we love the FBI. Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House. Now we love the FBI. Sorry.
And find out if some of this was funded by, I don't know, George Soros or overseas entities. There's a sort of a common theme and a common strategy that seems to be pursued on many of these cases.
So that guy who's funded by Israel and APEC wants the FBI to investigate college students for protesting Israel and APEC.
Wait, so you know what this is?
So that's what he's calling for the FBI. That's your Mr. Freedom, Mr. Liberty, Mr. Right-Wing Conservative, America First, wants the FBI to investigate American citizens at the behest of a foreign country. Who he's being funded by.
Who said he was good? I've never heard anybody be like, that guy is Mr. America First.
Go ahead.
This is a faction thing between the WEF people versus the APAC people. And they were kind of a little bit trying to be friends, but they're not. Soros is against Israel. So your two sides of this, of what's really going on, is the billionaires on the WEF side are fighting the APAC side.
Yeah.
So Trump's...
I think we could probably stop it there because that was, I'm not a big fan usually of Jimmy Dore's co-host because he gets really silly. But I think he kind of hit the nail on the head right there by saying that one billionaire class is fighting another billionaire class, and this is the outcome here.
Or you could look at it as the uniparty at work.
One person
with two sock puppets, like one on each hand, and they pretend to fight.
Right. Mike, I'd love to get your opinion on this, because I know that you're not really... I'm not going to even preface it. I would like to just get your opinion on it.
No. I am very open. I'm an international journalist. So basically, I am very open to pretty much what your show is playing. I am not get offended or anything like that, because myself escaped from this radical Islamic from Iran 50 years ago. Myself and my other brothers and sisters that are 90% of Iranian right now are the hostages of Ayatollahs. And they're the same way. We are the same way, you know. So we understand a little bit because more experience, because it happened to us. You see, when the radical Islamic, you see, we have to differentiate Ayatollahs from Iran. Whenever they say Iran attack Israel, please replace it with Ayatollahs. The Ayatollahs attack Israel. Then it makes more sense, because Iranian people are friends of Israel, friends of America, and, you know, all the world. And remember, Cyrus the Great in the Bible, he went and freed the Jewish people from slavery and give them money. At that time it was gold. So they went and told them, please go ahead and rebuild your homes much more better and higher, and so nobody can come and slave you again. And so we have had over 2,500 years or even more history with the people of Israel, and we never had any kind of this kind of event until Ayatollah arrived. Ayatollah arrives, then everything changed, and 10% supporter who brought this Ayatollah with the help of other entities that we all know, and so really changed face of Iran from United States. You know, before Iran, all everything was like United States. You know, people dress well, people dress with tie, and etc. But today, because of Ayatollahs, you know, women are in the hijab, and women in Iran are fighting, as we see. Every day they go in the streets without hijab and say, well, if you want, come on, put us in the FEMA camp in Tehran and other parts of Iran. I mean, we will not obey the hijab anymore. And so we can see there was many, many demonstrations, and many times Iranian could really overcome the Ayatollahs. But Obama, you know, at one point, 3 days of mass protest that millions went to the streets and took over really the city of Tehran and other cities, but Obama did not support it. You know, Obama the third day announced that, oh, it's okay, you know, go back to your homes or something. So anyway, the people went back. People saw that there's no support from Obama. So then, until today, we see a lot of Iranians give their blood for freedom and democracy and prevention of the World War III. But unfortunately, it seems all the, everything is in place for the World War III. And when we talk about radical Islam, please differentiate between radical Islam and real Muslims. This one I wanted to differentiate, because sometimes, you know, your listeners may say get mad, but we are talking about radicalism of anything, you know, whether it's in Iran, Ayatollahs, whether it's Hamas, whether it's Hezbollah, whether it's radicalism of Islamic in New York and in Los Angeles and other states, when they come and they say what their plan are openly. I mean, we have it in the YouTubes and et cetera. But anyway, I wanted just to make sure your listeners know when we talk about, we have, I forgot to say radical first. I apologize on your listeners, but, you know, we always talk about radical Muslims, that they are not even Muslims to anybody else.
No,
you know?
Exactly.
They read some part of Quran, and, you know, they interpret it any way they want, and then they become radicalization. If a religion teaches you to go ahead and definate, you know, and kill other people, it's better to come out of that religion. That's not a religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you, and I've said this so many times online, that Islam and Muslim are not the same thing. Islam is the politicalization of a religion. So they can basically, when a small group of people, no matter if it's communism, capitalism, socialism, Islamism, you know, if there's a small group of people who are in control of the majority of people, it will always be corrupted. And so, you know, I've also said, you know, for decades, that could this be brought down to a family squabble? You know, we know that Abraham, you know, that the Jews and the Muslims are literally have the same father, which is Abraham. So could we really just, you know, dilute this down, reduce this down to a family squabble and fix it? Because it really, I do believe that Muslims and Jews are the same family. And what gets in the way of all of this is politics, is, you know, a handful of people like Islam, like, you know, Catholicism.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, go ahead.
I think you're onto something. Yes, absolutely, 100% with real Jews and real Muslims. But then we have this whole other thing going on, which you call politicization. Am I saying that right? But I would counter that it's the CIA using small groups of thugs as their muscle, just like what they did in Ukraine with the self-identifying white supremacists, neo-Nazis, the Azov guys, the Stepan Bandera followers. They did that with ISIS. Who else did they do that with? Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda. Isn't this all just kind of an artifice?
I mean,
yeah, sure. Well, you can hold hands and sing Kumbaya, but what's the fly in the ointment here? It's the CIA.
And the MI6. And the, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Mossad, you know, and the Hamas. Yeah. You know, we're definitely onto something here. And I really do believe, it makes me sick when I see people posting, you know, go Israel or go, you know, Hamas. It is choosing sides and really,
like,
you know, yes, exactly. And the sports teams don't represent the people. Like, the only thing that's missing right now, like, we have all of these, we have the general population, you know, like, cheering for sides that don't cheer for us, you know? And that's really, like, the bread and butter of what is going on right now, is that the divides are so, you know, that you know, oh, like, that we're going to support sides that don't support us. And that really is the key to all of this. If we can get rid of the CIAs and, you know, the BLMs and the MI6s and the George Soros and all of these, if we can get back to what actually is reality, that's when we win. And we know that we'll win.
Yeah.
But right
and
now,
how do you do that?
How do you do that? Mike, how do we do that, Mike?
Yes. Before I answer your question, I would like you to play this 12 minutes video. You can find it either in YouTube or Twitter. And it's called The Great Replacement is a Statistical Fact.
The Great Replacement.
Yeah, is a Statistical Fact.
I also left a video, Danielle, I left a video for you of Max Blumenthal, who's been to the protests lately.
Mm-hmm.
And is speaking about this and is also talking about these protesters. And it just goes, I think it's much more nuanced analysis than the Jimmy Dore clip, to be honest. So if you want to go in that direction, I've sent you the clip in the Seeds of Change, messenger thread. So you've got that and you've got the time codes as well. So I did get that prepped for you if you want to, and we could just come back to it if you want. So I've got that, and then I also have another thing that directly relates to this regarding our government in bed with Israel, Anthony Blinken, Netanyahu named a building after his father. What are we doing there with this pier? We're putting basically boots on the ground now to sort of supposedly broker a peace kind of thing. But so I wanted to go in that direction. If you want to, I don't know, Mike, do you feel like what you want to introduce
she says in 12 minutes video everything we want to say, because it's her name is Eva Vela, VLAADINGER BROEK, Vela Dinger Brook. I mean, she exactly says what will happen. I mean, for example, she says a little bit, I say that she says in Amsterdam, now 56% are, immigrants, basically.
Okay, so Eva, spell it again, V-E-L.
AARDINGERBROEK, please.
I got her. Let's see, there's a 12-minute video. Let's see. And what was the name of it?
It's a Great Replacement is a Statistical Fact.
The Great Replacement.
She is talking in Hungary. I mean, there was a conference there, and she's
six
from
days
Amsterdam.
Ago.
Yeah.
6 days ago? Okay. All right. Kate, if you're okay, I would love to play this.
Okay. Yeah, just listen.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, Hungary. Hello, Budapest. Hello, fellow Europeans and American friends. Thank you so much for having me.
How is that audio?
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Having me. Allow me to skip formalities for a moment and dive right into a subject that is not so cheerful, but very, very necessary to discuss. Let me walk you through the past 7 days in Europe. This week in Stockholm, 3 elderly women in their 70s were stabbed in broad daylight on the streets. In London, 4 people were stabbed in a time span of just 42 hours. In Paris, hundreds of African migrants took to the street to riot. And in Brigelot, also in France, yet another church was burned down to the ground. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just a few incidents in just a couple of days on our beautiful continent. But we all know that these incidents aren't incidents anymore. If there's one thing that's for sure, is that we know, and our governments also know, that there is a link between mass migration and crime. In the Dutch city of Dordrecht, something interesting happened the other day. They announced, and this is a small city in the Netherlands, in my home country, that a new asylum center will be put in that little town. And what did the municipality do? They said, we are going to offer citizens who live in the vicinity of this center €1,000 to take extra safety measures. Our new reality in Europe consists of frequent rapes, stabbings, killings, murders, shootings, even beheadings. But let me be clear about one thing. This did not used to happen before. This is a newly imported problem. Samuel P. Huntington predicted this over 25 years ago when he wrote, and I quote, "In the new world of mass migration, the most pervasive, important, and dangerous conflicts will not be between the social classes. They will not be between the rich and the poor. They will be between peoples belonging to different cultural entities. Tribal wars and ethnic conflicts will occur within civilizations." Well, boy, was he right. And the worst part is, we as a society seem to have become indifferent to it. When another white boy or white girl dies at the hands of an immigrant, we might shake our head, we might let out a sigh, we might even get angry for a minute or two, and then we go on with our lives. We offer the family thoughts and prayers, but nothing ever changes. Ladies and gentlemen, what does that say about us? This is the response of a society that has already given up, a society that has already accepted its defeat. But is this true? Have we given up? Do we really accept the new reality that our globalist leaders have in mind for us? I know one thing for sure. And that is that if nothing changes, if we don't start to seriously fight for our continent, for our religion, for our people, our countries, then this time that we live in will go down in history as the time in which Western nations no longer had to get invaded by hostile armies in order to be conquered. This time will then go down in history as the period in which the invader was actively invited in by a corrupt elite. And not only did this corrupt elite invite the enemy in, they made the native population pay for it.
Okay. Ooh. Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying, and we're going to get right back to that, Mike. But from the flyers that you were talking about that were distributed on the campuses, correct?
I mean, put into the trees and the walls of the universities and colleges.
Yeah. Take a plane, you know, and just disperse them all over, you know, maybe not a plane, but everywhere. These flyers were everywhere, right?
And these were printed, and usually you have to go to a big print shop. And usually, how come our security forces, Homeland Security, is not aware of that? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
They are, because it's a George Soros's. Okay, so I'm sure you know who George Soros is, right?
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If there's one thing that we have to respect about the people who are perpetrating these war crimes, these global crimes, we have to respect that they understand us better than we understand ourselves. I'm not saying that we have to follow their lead, but what I am saying is that we have to respect that they understand how to control us better than we know how to control ourselves? Is that, that's a loaded question, but can I just get a true or false?
For example, in Amsterdam, in Netherlands, you go, you take $100. Now they want to report it to see why you take $100 cash from your account. So we are going towards a total cashless society. We have seen that in the United States. The gentleman went to a bank gets $1,000, and then they say, why you want $1,000 for? And they said, well, I want to buy a car, for example. And then they said, no, you have to write in the letter something, sign it, that you are trying to buy a car or something. Okay. I mean, it's things are getting crazy and crazier every day.
Right. Like, because they want to make sure you're not sending money to Donald Trump. You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of kidding, but like, they want to make sure you're not buying things that are illegal to their standards. You know,
right.
So and that's what we're still fighting against here. You know what? Ty is with us. Ty, I would love for you to like hold your comments. Maybe just give an introduction, but like, I really want to continue to unpack what Mike, our guest, is saying. Hello.
Hello, I'm here.
Yay. Okay.
Hi.
We love you. Ty, this is another one of our co-hosts here, Mike.
Yes,
and
yes. Hi, Ty.
Hello.
Yes.
So
nice to be with
but
you.
But we were talking about like, okay, but can we talk about the leaflet campaigns and how there is a history of leaflet campaigning to get your message out. So it's not really like true or false. It's not really a new thing to have these leaflets dispersed amongst protesting populations.
Yes, but once they say insult Americans, they say death to blah blah blah, death to blah blah blah. I mean,
yes.
That's
as an American, I'm so sorry to cut you off, and I would love to get right back to your point. But as a millennial, and I think that correct me, co-hosts, if I'm wrong, but they. Saying death to America isn't really an insult to most Americans. Am I right, panel?
I mean, we're kind of used to it. I mean, we kind of say it to ourselves, too. So
we say, yeah. Kate, have you seen that?
I'm Gen X. We don't say that. Sorry.
You don't say it. But, I'm saying that a majority of Americans feel that government is attached to America, right? And so that's why we fight so hard. We vote. We do all of these things. But I would say that it is kind of ingrained into our psyche here that if our government is taken over by corruption, we have to take it back. And I'm not saying hostily. And I can't, because that's not really what I'm saying. I'm not saying to take back the country hostily, but non-hostile ways, move away from the system. I would say that most people in America, and I'm going to say this as delicately as possible, want a major change that America isn't really willing to let go.
Yeah. This is all right. I mean, that's why we have the First Amendment, and the First Amendment is for opposition, so that we can speak. Because once you remove dialectic off the table, the only thing left is violence. That's the only thing left. That's why we champion freedom of speech so much.
And this is maybe just me and me alone, but like, if somebody says death to America, my bones say, well, why do you say that? Not to shut them up, not to say that they're terrorists and have to go or go into detention facilities. You know, it used to be somebody standing on a flag or burning a flag, right? This is not a new debate in our country, right?
So you want somebody to burn rather than fighting them on it. Like, what was done in the name of America to you or your people that you're now saying death to America? Like, being serious.
That's what we want to say.
Because it's an oversimplification or an over generic. Because it's like, all America? Which parts of America? Because not all of America is the same. So, like, what does that mean?
Well,
go into the details of the claim. The details is what we're after.
America's the biggest terrorist. So, yeah, like, what do they do now?
Right.
Well,
exactly.
remember, it's not it's the government, not the populace. The populace isn't doing it. We're not bombing Gaza. The government is. So, how does that work?
Sure.
Like, how does that work, you know?
Right.
So,
our tax dollars are sure supporting it, though. Am I right?
Yep. We sure are. A lot of us aren't even in ideology. We are. It's just... But, I mean, that goes into pamphlets. So if you were talking about pamphlets, you know that's where yelling fire in a crowded theater came from? You know, that's exactly what we're talking about right now. That's where that came from. It was Oliver Wendell Holmes bringing up a group of Yiddish-speaking socialists that had written pamphlets in a language most people couldn't read, Yiddish, contesting Mr. Wilson's participation in the First World War, of which they were warning us not to get into because they had fled their country to escape. And that's where that came in. They were actually warning about an actual danger, and he said, well, that's not really a danger because you're basically just yelling fire in a theater and we don't know there's a danger. But actually they were right. The Yiddish-speaking socialists were right about what was going on in World War I. So their pamphlets were why they were put in jail, even though they were right to give those pamphlets out to the American populace. So there you go.
Yes.
Mike?
Dennis?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. You know, the problem is they hate us, you know, from childhood, from, you know, they taught them this radical Islamic from Afghanistan, from Gaza, from Lebanon, Beirut, and Hezbollah, I mean, Houthis in Yemen. I mean, that they mess up all the Red Sea. I mean, all of the ships, many ships are on the fire, and everything is supported by Ayatollahs, by the same regime that was put by the New World Order at that time. And they knew that such a time will arise, that they need them to use them as a getaway for the World War III. And so, you know, again, we Iranian Americans, we all are love America, and we are assimilated not only with America culture, and we are all doctors working for NASA for very high securities, and many Iranians are working as a F-35 pilots, top guns. You know, we have no problem. But the problem is the radicalization of Islam. And yes, I have to say some maybe 5% of Iranians that are radicalized by Ayatollahs and still live in the United States. Yes, that's true. I cannot deny that. But 95%, we are very good. We love, culture of United States, and we love everything about United States. And we are almost third generation, almost after 50
years,
almost.
Right.
We're
all Americans. We're all Americans.
Yeah, exactly. We are all Americans. We support the Constitution of the United States, and,
yes.
You know, we want good for the United States of America, regardless
for sure.
of who elects, or, you know, we hope that we all have a good civilized, for the future of the United States, you know, we don't get mad to each other because one person elected over another one. So,
right.
You know. We try our best to vote for the whoever is the best interest of the country.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I would would argue that we are the best interest of our country. You know, we can criticize it and we can say, you know, quote unquote, death to America. And I really do think that this is a rhetoric problem, right? Short story, but we all know that the phrase, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, right? We all know that, right? And so some people listen to it and they're like, that means that they want to be free of something, right? And then the right side, I'm not saying correct, but the, you know, conservative side says, oh, there you go, the river to the sea. That is clearly meaning genocide of Jews. And we can say that on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think so, that way too. No.
Okay.
Honestly, when they say river to the land and say river, et cetera, whatever they say, you know, that means they want to kill all the Jews. And that's
okay.
Impossible.
Sure. But listen, I'm not done. Hold on. Because just today, no, not today, yesterday, just for complete honesty, I saw a very pro-Zionist person say, from the river to the sea, Israel will be free. So does that mean that person wants to genocide Palestinians? You know what I mean? Like, why is it okay for this pro-Zionist person to say, from the river to the sea, Israel will be free? Well, I'll tell you why. It's because Netanyahu said it first about the other side. Like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but there is a history of Netanyahu saying that first, from the river to the sea, Israel will be free. Right? And so,
to be fair, he has a lot of psychopathic sayings. So
he's
kind of known for psychopathy in this way.
So, I mean, just to be fair, Mike, if you think that that is incorrect, that Netanyahu didn't say it first?
I haven't honestly researched on that. Honestly, I cannot make a comment on that because I didn't. But I
am
sure
he did. And I can show you a video. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, he is a little bit, you know, like, because he born on full moon, full eclipse of the moon, and Ayatollah Khamenei, that who is in charge of Iran today, he also born on the full moon, full eclipse of the moon. So both of them are very, very hard-headed. I can say that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So in this, and very like humbly would like to come to you with the term anti-Semitic and the prefix meaning anti, meaning against, correct?
Yes.
And then Semitic or Semites, when you look up Semites, it means Arab and Jewish people. Like, it's a big region, you know, so basically being racist against I'll just say it, Middle East, and anybody in the Middle East. I mean, am I right? Am I off in some way?
Middle East is a white people, so we consider ourselves as a white. Whenever there is a question anywhere, you know, where you are, you white? Are you red Indian? Are you Mexican? Are you et cetera? We always put white because we are the Aryan nation from.
Well, but can we really?
Know.
Can we agree though that like that that phrase is about language, not about skin color, right? It's about Semites. They spoke, you know, Hebrew. They spoke any kind of Arab. Any like that's what that is about, is speaking this specific language. It's not really about skin color. It's about speaking this specific language. And when you look up anti-Semitic right now, it just says Jews, but it's really racist against most people in that region, whether they're Muslims or Jews. And I think we established earlier in this conversation that Muslims and Jews literally came from the same father, Abraham, right? We're talking about
absolutely
first.
No. In 2,500 years ago, I mean 1,402 years ago, when Islam came to Iran, I mean, they invaded Iran and destroy all the books, all the many of the
right
technologies
that
we have.
And we also talked earlier
before
in this conversation that there's a difference between Islam and Muslim, right?
Yeah, we were Jewish and Christian religion before, the Islam
we're
attacked Iran. Yes. And we are all belong to the same. That's absolutely
yes. Literally the same father. This regional.
Yeah.
Skirmish goes down to
made more prominent. That was disgraceful upon the civilization as a whole. The destruction of the Buddha statues is unforgivable in my eyes. That's just unforgivable. That's just all there is to it.
Well, all of and the books and the knowledge. They were going after the knowledge. Like let's be real. Like this skirmish, this family squabble, and that they still have hold over right now is saying that, you know, it's okay to go in and destroy libraries and temples and all of our ancient collective knowledge.
So
right?
Shameful. So shameful.
It really is. Yeah. And that's really like, let's break it down. The biggest killing machine in the history of mankind, we all as a collective are in charge of, right? Americans, the American military is the biggest killing machine in the history of mankind. And if we really acknowledge that and come together to stop that killing machine, maybe this family squabble will go away. I don't know. I'm just being optimistic here.
I think it will too. I mean, most of us don't believe in the death to America thing or the Russia nonsense. Like most Americans know that they're doing narrative and propaganda. They know. Like we don't believe that. We just don't believe them. We just really don't. I mean, we can't do much about it, but we don't believe what they say because they have to try so hard to convince us of it. That's how you know they're lying. Only lies need defending and propagating and boisterous appeal like this. I mean, if it was true, we would know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was true, they wouldn't have to keep reinforcing it so hard. So that means it's false by definition. So.
Yeah. And so, yeah. Gosh, I feel like, okay, we still have about 40 minutes left, but I feel like this conversation is going so well. We could play some videos about the same subject, but like, I think maybe we all know that as Americans, we need to change it. And, you know, I guess coming together and understanding the problem as a whole would ultimately lead us to how do we separate ourselves from the system? I mean, with still sovereignty, you know, as an American, we still have certain sovereignties. We're not citizens, but we are Americans. How do we start taking back control? Mike said earlier there's a potential for a weapons test over L.A., tomorrow or the next day. How do
no,
we prepare
tomorrow, Monday,
for that?
Monday. Yeah. And
tomorrow,
Hal
right?
Turner,
yeah, that's
radio.
If
you go to Hal Turner radio, you can see the exactly. He put a nice report that how much is the definition of just one atom bomb of Russia, Shaitan 1 or Shaitan 2 happens in the downtown Los Angeles, and how much would be the first wave, second wave, and third wave, how much people will be affected. So
yeah. And just to be clear that if that happened tomorrow, there would be, mass homelessness, death.
It's a mock exercise, and all the government officials would be monitoring it as well.
There was something about Putin doing something with Goldman Sachs tomorrow, and I was like, okay, so something's going on tomorrow, basically.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing is try to like, you know, get your Faraday bags ready. There might be a big like electromagnetic pulse on, you know, on our weapons, on our phones, on our internet. You know, like that kind of like
yeah,
take out our.
We're gonna be facing some pushback. The rest of this year, we're gonna be facing some pushback because we're not used to getting that. But now there's enough people united against us now. Or that might be a problem for us if we don't start kind of backing down a bit or starting to stop. You know, if we don't put our ego in check, it'll be put in check for us. So that's kind of basically what it is. So we've met some rivals and some matches, and it's time for us to kind of acknowledge it. So
exactly. Kate dropped off. I hope she can come back in. But yeah, so I feel you on that. But so basically what we've been, our, you know, we do cover current events here, but our main thing here is being able to survive, and not just with tin cans, you know, but like being able to grow our own food, have our own, news sources, like, you know, communication sources. Basically taking back our overall health, knowing that this stuff is coming. So, like I said, we can continue talking about this, let's call it Hamas or anti-Jewish, pro-Hamas or anti-Jewish is what the mainstream media is saying about all of these, which is about as far from the truth as we can possibly imagine it, you know, it's really right. It's really about, you know, how do we take back our system? And that's cool. I'm here and I'm for it. Let's try to take back these systems as we know them. Let's try to change them. Voting is a little late.
Part of this discussion is helping. I think it's why we do this, is because we're trying to, as we do this, the whole point is we have to learn how to stop dehumanizing each other, because that's the morale. Once they break the morale, we have to see Trump as human. We have to see Middle East as human. These are all people with families and lives and children, and they all want what's best. We have different ways of approaching it, but we have the same intentions or alliances. Once we start dehumanizing, it's over. Because then we can just treat each other as cattle, as property, as they treat us. Yeah. We have to
and
remember
America
to stay human. We have
that.
To. We have to do it.
America is very good at treating people like cattle, right?
Yeah,
and so,
they train us to do that, to view to other people. We're like, if we stop doing that.
Yeah.
If I may say, you know, we must, you know, we think that there maybe have a lot of differences, but once we talk, I mean, we have so many commonalities, and we want peace and tranquility, not only for United States of America, for the whole world. I mean, we are sick and tired of wars, and you know, our young people die, our husband dies, our wife die. It doesn't matter, is it in Russia or is it in Ukraine or is it in Israel or is it in elsewhere? You know, war is darkness, peace is light, and construction is part of destruction. Destruction is part of construction. So this goes hand to hand together. So we have to hopefully build better communities. And I am sure, I'm very positive that if, you know, God forbid, if, say, World War III starts down the road, which very high possibility, you know, American citizens will show their true colors, and their true color is helping each other, love each other, and each one of them will, you know, has some expertise, and everybody will help each other. I think we all go through it very smoothly as possible.
I mean, I don't think I could have. And I've been hosting this show for almost 2 years now. I don't think I really could have explained it better than how you just explained it.
Right.
What seeds have changed.
Thank you very much.
actually is. You know, we can get drawn into these skirmishes, but, you know, like, it's just because it's me, Danielle St. John, I try to go to the core right away of what is going on. And like I said, these ancient family squabbles that have been influenced by outside sources will come together very soon. I know it. And the closer we get to these family squabbles being, you know, squashed, the sooner humanity, the collective of humanity, comes together under the same principles, right? Like kosher and halal. Like, let's just go back to the very basics of the family squabble here. It's not even the family squabble. It's the same menu, you know, like, let's be real about that. Like,
You know, those are the worst wars, right? I've always said this. Those are the worst wars. The worst wars are not between people who are different, but people who are the same. Those are the worst wars. Those, what is it? Protestant, Catholic? Am I wrong?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Am I wrong, though? Yep. It's those are the worst wars you've ever seen. People that are very similar, very, very Irish and English, very, very similar, just slightly different. The worst wars, the most catastrophic wars you've ever seen in your life. China,
right.
Japan. I mean, I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying.
And you know, it is the same truth. Go ahead.
Yeah, especially in North Ireland, you know, that's such a good thing that you brought, because, you know, about, I think, close to 21 years, they had a war with each other. And right now, today, there is still Catholic side. There is a big wall between them right now. And there is a doorway between that east side or west side of the wall. So, therefore, if somebody wants to go to the other side, that's fine. You can go there right now. And better you be home by 6 p.m. because 6 a.m. the door opens and 6 p.m. closes. So if a Catholic side is in Protestant side and it's 6:01, they cannot go to their own side. What will happen?
Yeah.
know? So it's the hardest time ever you can imagine. You see, you cannot go to their hotels because they will see you. They say, oh, my, you are from the other side, and et cetera. I mean, it's a mess. It still is a mess.
Totally.
I mean,
it's
but we are brothers and sisters. We are all brothers and sisters. Why we should have this unity?
That's what you can tell. That's what you can tell, because they're so similar that it's like that hatred is personal. That's a personal, that's a mirror karma thing that's going on with them.
And let's be clear about the things that they were fighting about, right? What made them so different? One side said that if you put bread in a box, but you say that it's the body of Christ, and doesn't it get moldy, or does it grow into Christ? Right. That is one of the biggest things, is that one side said it's a metaphor. We are, you know, honoring Christ by taking this communion, this little, you know, ritual, and the other side said that it's actually the bread and, you know, I guess blood and bones and of Jesus Christ. Like, that's what you're doing. Which is a little bit, you know, cannibalistic to me, right? Probably would have been burnt as a heretic back some time in history for having these kind of very basic beliefs. Now, is that so far divided, so far removed from what's going on between Muslims and Jews? Really?
Well, the thing is that if that's how feuds work, though, is that after a while, they don't even know what they were fighting about.
What
they just know they're fighting.
About.
They just know to hate each other. They just have to hate each other and fight. They don't even remember the details anymore. It gets so muddled in the fight, and because there's so many casualties, now they're just getting revenge on the casualties and getting revenge on the casualties. It never ends. It never, ever ends. You know what I mean? It's a blood feud. It's a blood feud. So,
right, but it will end. It will end, Ty. We know it does.
It has to.
I think all
it has to. All extremes have to reconcile. It's one of the laws of polarity. You have to. At some point, it has to end. It's just, it can't keep going like this. It just can't.
Right.
So,
well, and so, Mike, I'm going to give you, like, the floor in just 1 second, but, like, I would like to even, like, further link it to things like the Samaritan text, right? The Jews and the Muslims, I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, really have a whole lot of association with the Samaritan text, but the stories are the same, and they were removed by thousands of miles, you know, so... Like there's the Gilgamesh, the epic of Gilgamesh and Noah's Ark are basically the same story. The story of Enoch, which is a main kind of deal for the Samaritan text, is all, he's in the Jewish Bible, the Muslim Bible, the Christian Bible. That dude gets around. So are we really saying that, like, you know, let's just be logical about it. Are we really saying that thousands and thousands of years ago, all of these places had the same story, and that's just, you know, some kind of, like, major coincidence? Or is it possible that the whole collective, you know, can possibly come together and see the same rules and the same law, I don't want to say laws, but the same rules, the same love, the same concepts, the same goals all together? Or are these just completely conflicting religious accounts, right? Like Ty brought up Buddhism, right? Same kind of stuff.
Yes. You know what happened in the past? Is, you know, first of all, there is a gentleman by the name of Armen Saginian, S-A-G-I-N-I-A-N. He wrote two books. It's called Verses of the Makkah and Verses of the Medina. And
okay.
So... In his account, this is the fact that, I mean,
yeah.
It's very easily. I mean, that Muhammad came, the real Muhammad came to his dream and said that Omar, Abu Bakr, Omar, Osman, they killed him, and he wrote only chapter 1 to chapter 10. That's why he made the two different versions of the you know, Quran. And so when you see chapter 1 to chapter 10, Muhammad, you know, you see pretty nice. I mean, it's no problem. But then from chapter 11, you read, then you will see that it's totally off 360 degrees.
Yeah,
so
somebody got a rock to the back of the head.
Right. So there, because at that time there was no internet, nobody knows the picture of Muhammad, who was the Muhammad. And so basically they killed him and they put a puppet, you know, like a coup attempt, and they put somebody instead of him, and they took him and said, oh, he's the Muhammad, really. He's the Muhammad.
Isn't it funny that it's the same story over and over and over again, whether it's the Quran, the Bible, Buddhism, it's all the same thing. It starts with something pure and is corrupted by people who are trying to control the masses.
Right.
We don't have time to play it tonight, but you should definitely look up the story of your enslavement. It will basically express what is going on now, what we are, you know, in the process of awakening to these truths and what we're going to do about it. And it's really, you know, quite brilliant. But that's for somebody, I think, that is a little less, you know, far along than you. You seem to know the basics of these kind of things. But the fact that they're all connected and that they try to constantly keep us fighting over certain things like boundary lines and student loans and college campuses and whatever the, you know, transgender, you know, all of these things that constantly keep us fighting, knowing that the system did this by design, how do we break out of it? And that's what you, you know, that you were talking about earlier, food. Like, how do we do it? Let's get food. Let's make sure that no matter where we are, when things happen, that we are in control of our own food. Like, that's, how are we going to have any kind of revolution of mind, body, or spirit if we can't control our food, if we can't feed ourselves? How do we do that? So, you know, and of course people come at me with this, you know, direction out of this and say, well, what about housing and what about water and what about this and what about that? Well, okay. So be able to feed ourselves. And then, you know, because again, how are we going to be able to think about survival if we can't feed ourselves, right? They're not going to keep stocking the grocery store shelves. And that's kind of why, like, these protests, I'm like, good, you're angry about something. How do we change it? It's May, you know, everywhere you can plant some seeds and have some kind of a crop. That's what I would be willing to help out with in these college campuses. I'll send them seeds. If you want to plant seeds all over these college campuses, you know, that's the kind of anarchy, quote unquote, that I'm here for. Right. But anything else, if you want to really like just say that this person is bad and this person is good and go Israel or go, you know, Hamas or whatever you want to say about it, I'm not here for that. If you want to really
Cold Wars. Cold Wars are my favorite.
Yes. If you want to protest, I will give you some seeds. That's how I will support. Sprinkle them all over the campus.
They should be only peaceful. Then it's okay, but unfortunately, it's not going to be peaceful. And right now, maybe temporary is calmness, but there is a calm before and a storm. So
yeah.
I predict this in your show right now that it's going to get worse and worse the road. You know, because you know, this is unfortunate that, you know. Yes, they get our freedoms. They use it, but then they create a mess for all of us, and that's not right approach. You know, yes, you can use First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, and etc., but don't abuse it, please. Don't abuse it. This is our beloved country, and we want it, you know, to be in good, peaceful all the time. And we are all brothers and sisters. But they don't see that. That's the biggest
problem. No, they don't.
They see us as an enemy, and that's the worst thing right now.
But do you think that, like, individual people think of us as the United States as the enemy, like the people of the United States as the enemy, or do you think that average people think are talking about the establishment?
The radical Islam. Yes. Radical Islam think us as our, their enemy. I mean, they call us our enemy number one. And they, as I told you, you can YouTube it, you can see, I mean, they have a plan for a total Islamization of the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same way they came to Iran. We are going to give you freedom. We are going to give you this. The Shah is bad. Shah is bad, et cetera. And only 10% believe that, and 10%, you know, and 90% were just silent, and we were just sitting in our homes. And then suddenly everything changed. And then we all ran away from the homeland. But then it's very scary for us, for all of us, because we have seen that. We don't want to see that again in a second country that we already established, and we are already, you know, have a contribution to the economic and stability of this beautiful land, but I don't want to see it again. It become second Iran and become Ayatollah's USA. I cannot able to accept that. That's my issue.
Yeah.
So one of my best friends was the niece, very young, of a very like the equivalent of Iraq's vice president. No, I'm sorry, Afghanistan's vice president in the 80s, and they fled. And she's got like shrapnel wounds in her arm. Very accomplished, definitely survived it, but it seemed at that time that their family was being ousted always because of political ties and not really because of the religious aspect to it. But I don't know. It does seem like our government backed these coups in other countries. We admit to it, and have been doing that for, you know, basically since the beginning of our military-industrial complex back in the 50s, probably before that. When it comes to your region and the peace that seems to be shaken by outside forces, I don't know. I feel like that was us. That was our doing, like the United States. Like we funded that, we executed that, we trained these insurgent groups. And I don't really see what's different now.
I mean, Macron from France, he gave the free Air France to Ayatollah from give them also refugee before, and in Papa Noel area, it was the house of the Khomeini over there. So Macron, shame on you that you brought Khomeini to Iran and destroyed this biggest beautiful civilization. And at that time, everybody were, you know, Iran was island of stability, according to Jimmy Carter when he came to Iran before Shah. Iran is not island of stability anymore. And that's the biggest problem.
Yeah. And not to cut you off, but it's like all of those things have to do with us. Like, you know, and let's say they're not. Let's say that France is like a huge problem. And I'm not discounting that it isn't a huge problem. But what I'm saying is that I can't control France. I can speak French. I actually have a pretty big, I guess, according to the Google numbers. But I can't really influence people in France, unless I'm talking about what you should plant and when. I could help with that, right? But what I do know is that I'm an American. I was born here. My great great grandmother was a full blooded Cherokee Indian. I'm not running for a seat, so this is not an Elizabeth Warren moment. But I can tell you that my family has been here for a very long time. I understand what it is to be a sovereign of this land. And I know that I can control this place and where I live and my current community and my country. I can't really do much in France or, any other country that we're not currently bombing. Right. Like, that's what I'm saying, is that we're in charge of the biggest killing machine in the history of mankind. Like, I think that might be the best place to start, is taking our resources away from that. And, you know, death to America is a very charged, a statement. And I'm not saying that I'm saying like life to America. I'm saying plant food. You know, I'm saying grow your families. I'm saying do things that America is against, that is pro-life. Let's plant food. Let's have babies. Let's grow knowledge. Let's grow the collective. Honestly, like, I am just as much talking to the people who call themselves conservatives as I am people who are pro college campus sit-ins. You know, like, I think that if we all come together and remove ourselves from the problem, who could ever accuse us of being terrorists?
Indeed. Well, you know, France had its own opposition. Remember we were there and we supported Le Pen over Macron? There was a huge faction that did not support Macron. That was Le Pen's side. And they all called them what? Right-wing nationalists, and so it got rid of them for that reason. They just accused them of being the thing they actually are, and then move on their way. I mean, there's opposition forces everywhere. It's just they're not highlighted or they're demonized. It's one or the other.
I forgot your name.
Ty and Danielle.
Danielle. You may say it's okay to say that, but it's not okay to say that because they get 1 inch, then they get 2 inch and 6 inch, and they will get the whole country. We have to have some red line. And yes, freedom of speech is good. Freedom of press is good. Freedom of information are very good. We're living, you know, United States of America, and, we all have the same constitutional right. But when it comes to that kind of events that these people calling themselves, we are Hamas, you know, Hamas is a terrorist organization. So what they say, you see, if we have
they're being led down the wrong path. They don't know what Hamas is. I can almost guarantee you that these very educated Ivy League school children are completely in the dark on what Hamas is and what Israel is. On most things, their headbands are hideous. That still isn't a terrorist attack, you know? Like, it's not a terrorist organization to say these things. And as a matter of fact, if we really want to stop the aggression, we should listen to them and not shut them down. Like, because the answer to wrong speech is not shutting it down. The answer to wrong speech is right speech, is correct speech. You know, and if you shut them down, they're just gonna hammer harder. And so that's why I'm saying, like, let me hear what you have to say. Let me hear it. And I can guarantee you that a lot of what they're saying is that the military-industrial complex is out of control at the core. And we should listen to that. I'm not saying to stomp on flags.
Part of freedom of speech is the right to hear, not just the right to listen or the right to speak, the right to hear. We have the right to hear everyone. We have the right to. So that's the reality of it. So
right. I may not agree. Well, I mean, this is, I'm not going to, plagiarize here because I do not recall the author, but I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it is an American pastime. You know, it's what we're founded on.
Yep. Along with other things, several other things, including John Stuart Mill's essay on liberty, which is, they may kill us, so that's all we shall do for death. We're not going to give them anything else. We will continue on. That's just how that works.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
which is why they try to ban the collective speech. But go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, you give me liberty or death. That's true. But at least for good reasons, you know, not for the bad reasons, you know. I mean, this is, yes, I understand everything you say, but I'm disagree with that portion's or the root to arrogant. And this is the radical Islamization that they are going to, we will fight with them very soon, wherever they are.
No, totally agree.
But it's still for them to be say, okay, we are radical Islamization, and we can say anything we want to say without consideration. Yes, I mean, the law says you can say that, okay, but am I going to say that? No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
No, but we must love each other. We must use good language with each other, and good perspective with each other. Not like that. But they don't understand. They are radical, and their plan is to take over United States of America, and we will not let them to win, because we lost one country already in Iran under the mullahs, and we will not give United States to Ayatollahs again.
It
doesn't matter.
I totally support, and I honestly back you up in any way I possibly can. But I think that, like, the plot twist here is the organizations that took over your country are the organizations that are take over countries that are collectively coming together. You know, it seems like
have resources. Or just have Congo, Haiti, like, they just, you know, we implant them there. Yeah,
so. But that's us too. And that's the thing, is that, like, when people say death to America, I don't think that they're talking about people coming together as collectives and taking back resources and making sure that we have what I think really what they're saying is death to the same organization that I'm sorry to say took out your country.
Wouldn't you rather hear that than deception, like Obama? People who lie to you, they're pretty and polite, but they do deceptive things. I would rather people hate me up front, because then I know what they're actually more respectable, because they tell you right to your face, as opposed to people that are like, well, we're pretending to be your friend. That's how they're getting away with this, is they're pretending to do things, in the name of freedom, in the name of jobs, in the name of, that's insidious.
Yep.
That's actually more pernicious and evil, quite frankly, in my eyes, but that's just me.
And please, I know we only have a few minutes left, but, like, basically what they're doing is they're hiding under the guise of nationalism, but supporting globalist agendas, right? Like, there's, why can we talk about France and England and all of these other countries, Israel, why control all of that?
Albert Camus. Albert Camus. Freedom and safety is always the alibi of tyrants. Albert Camus.
Right. So, it's such a slippery slope for only having 3 minutes left in the show. But, Mike, I really hope you call back next week. Because
thank you very much,
conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate you. Sure. But my last word is, this unity is very dangerous to the people of the world. And we must come together as one nation under one God.
Yes,
and those people who are with us, we already know that. There's no problem.
Yes.
And those people who are not with us, of course, we hope to come to our side. But if they don't, then the time comes, we will know that.
Right, exactly. Well, there's a lot of people that call in and say, why aren't you freaking out? Why aren't you, getting out and protesting? Why aren't you so, like, nervous? And I'm like, well, especially as a Christian, because that's the third element here that's the same. But I read the end of the book, and, that's you know, the glory of knowing our paths is that...
Is that we respond and not react, yeah. Because reactions are unconscious.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we know things are going to get bad, but I'm not going to risk, you know, all of this stuff to call out things that we already know, you know. And
always
so what
darkest before dawn.
Always
darkest before dawn.
Mm-hmm. What a fantastic show. I'm really very, like, gratified and edified by this conversation. So I love you all. We only have about a minute left. Please
and
share
we
this.
We love you all, too. We love
yes.
you all, too. And thank
that's
you
the only way we
your
win.
Beautiful show. And, you know, until next time.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
Love
I'll
you
talk
all.
To you all later.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.